Right now we have everyone is present, except Kevin Roberts. But I'm assuming he may show up. All right, I'd entertain a motion to accept the minutes of the previous meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Having heard none? All right, the resolution is Resolution 473, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 23 of 2018. And this is basically our Ulster County ethics law. And I know that the chairwoman and the minority leader have been working on this diligently. And so we'll go from there.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
All right.
Through the chair, has our illustrious deputy clerk actually broken out the pin cushion and pulled all the pins out that we kept on sticking in there?
Well, all of the pins are listed in here under the heading pin.
Why don't we? I mean, can I suggest that we just quickly go through?
Yeah, let's
go. Yeah, that's what I was going to.
That
was basically my plan. All right, so we have this resolution 473 on page one. There is everything wonderful on page one. On page two, everything's wonderful.
On page two, the child is highlighted. That's highlighted because there's no gender.
No, I'm looking at the resolution. I'm sorry.
Yeah, section two.
Starting on one. Okay, I was grabbing the resolution as opposed to the entire resolution, not the meeting.
Section two, child. It currently reads means any son, daughter, stepson, stepdaughter of a county officer. Nick, would it be fair to just say child means any child or stepchild of a county officer or employee? Is that too broad, or is that specific enough?
So is the objection to the use of the term son or daughter or stepson or stepdaughter?
I believe so.
It
doesn't capture anybody who's cisgender or...
I mean, look, you know, this is not really a legal question. So, you know, if you want to, you know, use different words to make the same meaning conveyed, I don't have a problem.
Is the word child or stepchild specific enough legally to... capture? I think so.
I don't have a problem with that change.
You could say offspring so that you're not using the same word to define a word.
Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah, because any offspring and then stepchild.
Step offspring.
No.
I knew you were going to get into
that. That's why I had to go to step.
Look, I mean, I think, you know, basically.
Let you do step
I think
off.
Basically the child, stepchild works.
Yeah.
You don't see, why do you need to, you know.
It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't differentiate between adoption or natural born. It's just child. It's kind of common meaning.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, that sounds fine.
Yeah. Child or stepchild.
It's got a common meaning.
Now we go down to the, on the third page, three.
Yep.
Looking at gift.
Section J, you're comfortable with this language, Trace? This is what we came up with at the last meeting. We didn't pin this one, but I just want to make sure that everyone's comfortable with the language being used.
We would substitute the red for the whole, all the previous definition. And it would be a definition would just be gift.
Right.
Yes.
Wait, are we substituting the entirety of that red paragraph for the entirety of what's? Because then you've got strike throughs and you've got other.
No.
So what is that? Yeah, what is that?
Here's the handwritten comments.
The mindset would be gift, and then, you know, however you want to separate that from the part of the, in other words, a gift is like the customer or client. Well, then you with the semicolons, you have gift, semicolon, and you do, then you do the giving of some value, blah, 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 woof, 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 and then you go into the other part that's already there.
So we're adding is what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're not replacing.
That's
what makes sure we're on the same page.
Wait, what's the... Jay, what do your notes say we were doing?
You were replacing.
We
that
were
was the conversation last time.
But it's not struck through on the what we see.
Well,
here.
because we may not have decided.
Yeah, it was. She wanted to have everything there. You had been comfortable with this definition of gift, but I didn't know if you were still.
You mean this new one?
Yeah.
Correct.
Which is
as a replacement?
Nick, which is Minority Counsel's handwritten note on the. first working document.
That's right.
Was this this definition in red?
Nick, didn't this come from the IRS regs?
It did. It's from Internal Revenue
Guidance. But isn't but you're still keeping all the black in there.
No, you're not. We're talking about what's being talked about right now is replacement of the red for the entirety of what is currently in black for Jay. Although these are Nick's notes, right? But how can you say about
we coordinated.
You just got rid of half the room here.
You would have to be a person without a tie.
Okay, it was intended as a joke, Kathy. I
was my
remark.
Okay. I think it's fine. I mean, can I just
see,
ask?
He hasn't touched it.
So there's a sentence in the previous definition that says a financial transaction may be a financial benefit, but shall not be a gift unless it is on terms not available to the general public. Do we need to leave that sentence in?
Which one are you talking about?
The second sentence. Like, is this actually replacing only the first sentence, technically? Because the first sentence is what... Are we leaving the campaign contributions authorized by law?
My mindset is you take financial benefit and you add that bread and you leave the rest of it in, don't you?
Nick?
Yeah, if I can just interject, if you refer back to the comments, the specific question was need a definition of just gift. So the request, I interpreted that to mean you wanted just a definition of what is a gift.
Yeah.
Because
because they were married together.
And financial benefit, I don't think shows up anywhere else in the law.
Okay.
So,
subsequent question is: Do we want to leave the last, or need to leave the gift does not include campaign contributions authorized by law? The last sentence. Do we want to leave that?
Yeah.
So then it would be the what is written in red followed by the last sentence. Is that what we're saying?
Yes. Does that work for everybody?
So it's in red, and then basically it starts from the word. Make sure I'm clear from the word gift.
Does not include campaign contributions. Yes.
Does not include. Okay. So we're taking red, and then that part.
Yep.
That's the gift. Okay.
So we're striking the includes any money, service, license, permit, contract. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. All right. So we're striking all that. All right, everybody's in favor of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. Let's move on. H4. Okay.
Struck relative,
and it's immediate family member or members of the household. That's fine.
Yep.
Interest, of course, was changed. The letters are changed.
Yeah.
Then the next part is...
changed his or her to their.
L1. Is there hurt there?
What? Next?
That was just a
grammar thing. Was a generic groan? Okay.
Yeah, had all nothing right. to do with the comment.
All right.
Just a generic groan. Very good.
The record show generic groan was given.
The next major change is on page 5.
I need a lawyer.
tell Hector not to give up his day job.
You are
what page are you on?
The next one is on page 5,
yep.
Which is, I'm just skipping over changes in letters. We added comptroller to the list of local elected officials.
And legislators and whatever already added. So we move on down. The letter changes are fine.
Yep. Extraneous 2 removed.
And then when you have the, go down to 6, relative was switched over to immediate family member. Unemancipated child means child or stepchild. That would be in going with the previous.
Or is claimed or could be claimed by law on the state income tax returns of the reporting individual as a dependent.
Yep.
Good?
Yep, that's good.
All right. Page 7, we get to our first pin, which is continuation of the Board of Ethics and authority thereof. This had to do with whether we wanted to take the new board to take effect immediately or to sub them in as the terms expired.
Now, the original intent I thought you had was to sub them in as their term expired, right?
It was, yes.
That was your original intent.
Now, are you fixing your error, or you got your hand up?
Thinking.
Oh, you're thinking. Okay, note that.
Scratching my head.
Abner is scratching his head and thinking, yes. Yes.
I mean, my instinct would be to do it immediate, and if we want to, if people that are currently on are going to get appointed, they'll be appointed immediate, but then we do an immediate.
Okay. I would agree with that. That's what I was going to basically say, same thing.
I'm good with that.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. And then if we need to create staggered, you know, whatever we can write up, like, yeah, we immediately.
So then what do
we we'll stagger them, yeah. And. I mean, I really don't care who gets the longer appointments. It does not matter to me.
That's not going to be something we're disagreeing with. Yeah,
we could use straws, but not plastic ones.
All right, so on that, we will redraft. In the interim time between now and next month, we will redraft those. We'll redraft this section in order to make it take effect immediately.
Okay.
At the end of, I would say, not immediately, but, you know, next calendar year. January 1st, 2020.
Yeah, that would probably be the way. That wouldn't be a bad way of dealing with it.
If we move this in August, it's just a couple months away.
Exactly.
Okay.
Is that?
Is the intent here to essentially reconstitute the board with completely new terms, or are you disbanding the board and repopulating it under this law? What is it that you're doing?
The current law keeps the current Board of Ethics running.
Correct.
This would essentially disband the current board,
right,
and replace them with the new appointing authority all at once, but with staggered terms. So the chair, the minority leader, the majority leader, and the county executive,
right,
their appointments would have different terms.
So you're giving them a chance to not continue serving, is that?
We're giving the new appointing authorities the chance to not have them continue serving.
Okay.
You get what I'm saying?
That's kind of a policy thing, I guess. I think the reason it's worded this way in the Orange County Charter is if you have current complaints now pending before the board, the question would be, do you then, bring in a new board to pick up on a complaint that's already been reviewed by an old board? Like, they've made a probable cause determination, they're going to have a hearing, see you later, board, here's a new board. I don't know that that would create a problem for the law, but like a litigant before the board might have an issue with it. I was prepared this way.
I would think that they'd have a couple of months to dispense with complaints.
If you make it effective in January, that would probably deal with that.
It's probably.
Yeah. All right. So we're doing it as of January. All right. Tracy, did you?
Yeah. No. I like the cleanness of January, but I appreciate what council is saying could be an issue. I don't know if we'll find out how many things are currently pending. I mean, it won't be relevant to right this minute, but just to have a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, over the course of a year, when I've looked at those reports, it's not like there's a crazy ton of activity.
We don't have a huge volume, right?
And a lot of their complaints arise out of financial disclosures, which are filed in May and then foiled thereafter by the Board of Ethics. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would probably just suspect that ultimately, any complaint that they would receive between, say, like just literally say now till, the end of the year, there's going to be a certain level of they may or may not have to act on it right away. Could we actually encounter a situation where they have something immediate? Sure, but I don't know if that's especially likely.
Yeah, but I mean, would it be all that difficult for somebody else that came in to get up to speed on the case?
Well, if it's in the middle of a case, I mean, that's kind of tough.
Yeah, but that's. I mean, that's going to be. I mean, that happens in other cases at some point. I don't think it. It happens to judges. It happens to a lot of people once in a while. Yes.
One option would be to begin to leave it with the current board and begin the replacement of the new members with all of the legislative appointments, because the current ones are the executives, and then have the executives come in, and that would give you that continuity. It would.
But which ones would you replace? Because I don't think you can have two boards operating simultaneously.
No, you would replace members. So you would have whichever is the longest serving one you would rotate them off and bring one new one in each year. No. So it'd be a much more gradual transition.
I hear what you're saying. The problem is as I may see it, I could be correct. You know, correct me, please, feel free. But that you're going to have a situation where you're almost like. You're almost like trying to operate two different systems. You know, I mean, I think that's probably the point that the minority leader was sort of getting at, where even with, yes, I hear what you're saying. Like, look, right now they're currently set up in a certain way, right? Yes, you could kind of go and say, you know, again, pick whatever, pick two, three, you know, whatever the number of members you need to kind of go and pick to go and basically sort of be appointed via this method. The problem becomes then, are the other people then at that point being appointed by the executive? And does the executive sort of consent at that point to then appoint those other individuals? And if they're only being appointed, are they being appointed just till the end of January, to which point then we're actually then beginning to actually stagger in those terms?
Yeah, I know. You know,
I mean,
to
you almost end up.
I think we just do January and assume that they're going to.
I really don't see this as a giant problem. If there is a case or something like that that's not settled at that point, you know, new people have to get up to speed. That's the way it works.
I would think that the Board of Ethics is going to try and. To the best of their ability, handle anything before the end of the calendar year. So.
All right, so what we have to do on this is what we have to do is work through the numbers, I mean, the changes and what the staggers are, right?
Yeah.
Well, and we're not going to be acting on it this week, this month, are we?
No, I just wanted to know what it is that we're changing. So you have the, just because I assume Jay and or I are going to work on that language maybe.
Yeah, starting in January, taking place in the changes begin in January 1st, all
right? Right, but is it that we're taking all the existing members and ending their terms as of December 31st?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, right. That's what you do.
What was the other option that you were asking about, Nick? What were the two technical you were saying?
I was just trying to ascertain what the intent of the amendment was, but I think Ken answered that in terms of you're ending the current board December 31st.
Yep, and let me note that Legislative Roberts has been here for about 12, 15 minutes.
At least.
Okay. I got it. And that you're creating the staggers.
Yeah, we're going to stagger the new terms.
Yep. For the first time around.
Based on, we'll play dice or
something.
You
want to add that into this paragraph? Into this paragraph.
Yeah. Well. Is that or regardless of where we add it, you know, we can work on where we put that
I think.
In.
Yeah, it'll be wherever. This one.
Yeah, wherever we decide it belongs, I think.
You might want to retitle this section. Discontinuation.
All right, so,
yeah.
We got through that. Our next move is, and the terms are 3 years or five? They're 5 years, 3 to 5 years, right? We're staggering them in. Is that correct? Gracie?
However we have to do it for the staggering.
I think that this is where, I think that this section is where that belongs, so we might just,
get rid of section four.
Yeah, we might delete section four and then add the disbanding and repopulating to section 5.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you think, Nick?
I think that's cleaner.
Yeah, that's cleaner. We can strike.
All right, so everybody all right with that?
With me.
They are. Having heard no complaints, let's move on.
All right.
Page 8, we have some slight changes that we all agreed with, changing from chairman to chair. And,
no member shall currently serve as a county elected official or county employee or currently hold the position of, is that
chair,
comfortable with everybody?
Chair,
I think sergeant.
Vice chair.
Yeah.
I know this section was discussed, but... would it be clearer yet to say concurrently? Because there was that discussion, and I think concurrently would solve it.
Yeah, I'm fine with concurrently. So
that's fine.
Because current could mean in the year 2019 when this is passed, but you don't mean that. You mean no one shall serve concurrently as both.
All right. Next, the PIN.
That's fine.
That's fine. That makes sense. PIN, Service of Local Elected Officials.
Yep, fire commissioners or party committee members.
Now, are we excluding the Service of Local?
Yeah, I think we're having a discussion about whether we want it to or not.
I don't think, to me, I'm sorry. To me, I don't think that these things are a reason to disqualify service. But
John,
yeah, I think I can understand the case why local elected officials and even party committee members, in a sense. But I mean, for like fire commissioners, I don't see why that one plays, because those are nonpartisan fill positions.
I definitely agree with that.
And also, it's, you know, it's a, not an easy job, and I mean, I think, and it's a, like, again, the non-political elections. So.
But how do we deal with the participation in campaigns? How do we label that?
I think that's almost impossible.
I think our current law prohibits participation in campaigns.
It
our
does.
Our current law does.
Yeah. Yeah, you can still donate, but I think
you can't participate.
But then where do you draw the line as what's called participation? I mean,
is making a Facebook post participating in a campaign? I mean, you know, writing a letter to the editor?
Right. Or like, for instance, one of the members there nominated the county executive and continued to serve as a...
I mean, I just feel like at some point we're going to dangerously... You know, infringe on free speech.
Yeah, my concern. How about?
Okay, that's charter. Yeah.
My concern is that you'd be seen if you were on the board of ethics as potentially being conflicted. If, say, you were the chair or the treasurer or this an officer of a campaign. For a candidate, potentially even for, you know, one or the other parties.
But there's no named title for that. That treasurer is the only thing where there's really like a named title in local elections. I mean,
but you could, but no, but someone could be advertised as a campaign manager, campaign chair, or something like that.
Well, yeah, I don't know. How,
that's not really honorary, though.
Yeah.
You know, but campaign manager's not.
Right. Go ahead.
I mean, sometimes.
You could say concurrently serve as a paid county elected official or paid, and all this stuff about the political party, or paid member of a political campaign.
No, because it's not. I mean, it's not just paid. I mean, for most of us are paying our,
but isn't
our treasurers, or if we have them, or campaign managers.
I think the service of local elected officials are, I don't know about the fire commissioners, I don't agree with.
They're usually not paid. So
they're not paid, but I don't
them.
Agree with fire commissioners, but yeah. I, you know, there are, like, for instance, you know, somebody that's, you know, depends on the appointment. If you're appointed to something that's, you know, kind of prestigious, that changes the mindset of what that is. Not that a fire commissioner isn't prestigious, but it's a different thing. I mean, I don't agree with the fire commissioners.
Can we just—I think we all don't agree with it. Does anybody agree with the fire commissioners?
No.
All right, so let's strike that.
Let's strike that.
That gets taken out. I mean, I agree with the service of local elected officials, but what do you mean by local elected officials?
Yeah, okay with them.
We're
okay with them serving.
Anybody paid?
Yellow is not in there yet.
If we get to the point where we actually agree on whether elected officials should or should not be allowed, then you're right. I think you're right.
Elected officials, everybody agreed.
County elected officials.
County elected officials.
Oh.
Ken made an entire statement before about local
elected officials. Exactly. The pin isn't in there yet.
I mean, you know, the ethics, the county ethics board is not going to hear local, local town, ethics complaints. Towns typically either impanel or don't impanel their own ethics boards. I don't see the conflict. That's, you know. And if there is a conflict, you know, the individual member can recuse.
Yeah, but, you know, I hear what you're saying, but again, I'm not trying to go in somehow and anticipate a problem that doesn't exist.
I mean, give me an example of a conflict.
I mean, you could have a scenario where the local town supervisor and the county legislator or the whatever, you know, has a grudge against the individual, right?
Or you could point out, like, for instance, I represent three wards in the city of Kingston, so what happens if Randy Scott Childress was on the, and something comes up with me, and I work with him directly out of the three aldermen.
He'd recuse himself, and there's still more members of the ethics board.
Yeah, but if he doesn't recuse
himself. But, you know, can I just respond? Just to your point about a grudge, I mean, Joe Schmo off the street could have a grudge against me. I don't see the likelihood of a grudge more, you know, from a local elected official than from Joe Schmo.
So,
I don't know about Joe. All
right. Thank you.
Fair enough.
Well, first off, I spoke to Joe and he does have a grudge against you. But number two, you know,
he's got to get in line.
I understand that, what you're saying, but, you know, same way anybody can sue anybody in America. But the point I think that I'm making is that clearly when you actually got, you know, local elected officials, for good or for ill, being on an ethics board, I think, begins to sort of blur some lines. I think, you know, you've actually got individuals who are also at that point elected by and large, although not always, on a party line.
What about the idea?
No, I'm just saying, like I can understand, you know, clearly when you start talking about, like, you know, fire commissioners run independently. They may happen to have a political bent, but that's not a piece of, because they're actually elected independently, right? I can understand why we would just kind of say, no, that's fine. You know, but when we get to, like, local elected officials and or, you know, those who are involved with campaigns, you know, I think we have to try to make the board as apolitical as possible. I'm not saying that it ever will be, but...
What about the idea of, you know, it has to be, we have to put down Ulster County elected officials, obviously.
We already have that in there.
We have that in the whole currently part.
All right, so it would be town or city board members.
Yes, that's what we're talking about.
Can I read
that's what you're looking at, town and city board members.
Well, there's villages, but, you know...
Villages are nonpartisan elections. Now we're getting into nonpartisan versus nonpartisan.
Except for Ellenville.
Can I just read you what's in the charter? The charter does have a
definition of...
Let Tracy read the current.
So
hold on.
It says, no member shall hold office in a political party or hold elective office in the county. For purposes of this section, office in a political party shall mean all offices in any political party, including the office of committee person or committee member. I like this language. I just would want to make the exception for something like fire commissioners. You know, I don't know how we do that, because...
Well, independent elections. So, for example, as the minority leader just pointed out, you know, two of the villages in this community run, you run an independent election without political parties sort of being involved. So I guess you could try to go and say, in any nonpartisan election, that those individuals could serve. And that would actually probably open the door then for school board, oddly enough, because that's also nonpartisan.
I mean, our charter already has a definition of, you know, public official or elective public office. I don't agree with it, but it's not my hill to die on. So if we want to include the language that Tracy read, but we can make a specific exemption for offices that we do not want to count as elected offices, if we want school board
and fire commissioner, library board, but if we're gonna I would stay away from that.
If we're going to include all the town offices, I would want to include the village offices. And city office.
Me too.
I think we should.
I don't agree with including any of them, but be that as it may,
that might just be cleaner. I mean, is there a need to include an elected official, even a school board or library board official, in this group? It's 5 people out of 180,000 people. And I think what we're trying to do is avoid a partisan person being in there. And even some of these nonpartisan elections have some partisan character to them. So why at least paid county, paid elected officials, although that would allow a town board member, maybe in some towns, and then not the supervisor.
Are any town board members not paid?
No, I think they're all paid.
They're all paid.
Denning, Hardenberg, I don't know.
I think they're paid.
Okay.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I mean, I'm trying to think right now. I think every
town
has paid
something. Now has paid.
So maybe it's paid elected.
Paid elected officials.
But I don't know. I mean, it makes it sound like our issue is the money.
Yeah,
it's
not, though.
It sounds messy.
I know, but everyone that is partisan.
So I propose that we put the language that Trace read from our current ethics law and exempt fire commissioners, because we obviously can agree on that.
I think fire commissioner and members of a library board.
I'm fine with library board too. So
I don't know if the school board. The school board can be pretty political at times, and you know, it's a
come to Woodstock and sit in a library board meeting. It's way more political than school board meetings. Yeah. I mean, I think it really is just
decide
based
which books
on
to
the
ban.
Local issue.
Yeah, that has been in the papers.
Yeah, yeah,
the Woodstock by the way.
That's true. I mean, I think school boards. I don't think of them as being party political. I mean, yes, they get. They're very. They can be very intense, for sure.
One of the concerns that I have that I'll just raise is when we created the redistricting commission, and you know the charter revision commission. One of them excluded notaries. I remember that very specifically, and I feel like they didn't mean
charter.
What's that?
I think it was
charter. I feel like they didn't mean to exclude a large swath of people. Like, you know, there were people who, you know, who volunteered to serve on an unpaid board who had to renounce their notary and then go back and get it again later.
Was that like Futterfast, something like that?
Or? I don't remember. I don't think it was Futterfast because you're attorneys. You're automatically notaries as long as you file the paperwork.
Yeah, but see, potentially it's easy to go in.
But, I don't know. I just, I worry that eventually we're going to thin the field of qualified candidates, the more people we.
On the other end, you open yourself up to other things.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to belabor this point, because I think we're actually getting there. But just to your point, Mr. Minority Leader, I mean, we already have this language now, and we were able to put together, you know, a board. I hear the complaint, because this was the complaint actually that sort of came up even at the time that we implemented this,
right?
Way back. When the hell was it, actually? What year is the ethics board date back to? The latest version,
I think. But that was elected county officials. I think we've had town elected officials on the ethics board.
I don't think
was Kenny Hassett on the town board when he was on the ethics board?
No,
I
don't think so.
My read of this would be you couldn't
all
right. be on the town board.
No, because I remember the previous executive actually complaining about this in terms of like the number of people, this very issue of the number of people, because even, you know, we were going down to committee level. Right, you know, you can't even be on a political committee, so that became, you know, even more of a sort of a thinning of the herd. So we're actually, Mr. Minority Leader, we're actually expanding that definition by including the fire commissioners and the school board, not a school board, the library board.
All right, so we are in agreement with the fire commissioners and the library boards, right?
Yeah. I'm okay with the school board too.
I'm okay with the school board, too.
I'm okay with the school board.
I'm also okay with the school board.
All right, I'll be fine, too, then.
And school board.
I mean, I don't
and
wanna,
then how about
I'm
in
not,
between now and
wanna,
the next meeting,
like
if something...
As you as he pointed out, I don't want to die in that ill.
About, you can have the conversation.
So you're using the definition of public office from the current ethics law, accepting those...
I'm using the qualifications. It's section 44.8.
All right.
B...
Three. Good. Okay. With
that,
creating
those three exceptions.
Got it.
All right. Now we are we
ready
to roll on?
Can I just read to you? Because the other part of the yellow was about the campaign, being involved in the campaign. What it says currently is a member may make campaign contributions but not otherwise participate in any Ulster County election campaign.
I think we should adopt that.
That's what's in our current.
I think we should just adopt that. I think it just makes it easy. Yeah,
that's
fine. Have it.
I agree with it.
You know, you can't take away somebody's ability to donate because that's a free speech issue, but otherwise, I think...
But writing a letter to the editor is a free speech? I don't know.
But
all right.
But,
yeah,
but that's
is,
showing
but
partisanship
then,
in a
yeah,
different
the problem
way.
Would that be created?
You know.
That's part of the partisan problem. Part.
Look,
I feel like it's a slippery slope.
Right,
I don't
just,
know
I'm
if
just
I'm quoting you, Ken, but
yeah,
I feel
no,
like it's
no.
a fine line. I mean, I
we
feel like it's a fine
it,
line.
So
I appreciate the intent, and I'm inclined to go with this, but... I don't think it's without issue.
Agreed.
All right, we moving on.
So what are we moving on with this? With what? With the old language?
Let's just add that. Yeah, let's just add that in. And
well, it'll be highlighted.
We add the old language in. All right.
That way we can move on.
The exceptions of the three exceptions that we put in there. All right. There is no elected dog catcher, right?
No.
Are we, and we're through with 3 years versus 5 years? That's what we want to do? Because our current is five, right? And
are we doing three or are we doing... I thought it was staggering starting with three, right?
No, no, no. This, look, it says that the members shall serve staggered three-year terms. So all we're saying three. Right now we're saying three. We hadn't marked it, but I'm okay with it.
I'm fine with that. All right, next we're on what, page 9? Yeah. Where you have the agreement on the other part?
Page 9, I have...
Yeah, it's going to have to be logically changed. So, Ken, if we're starting all the terms at once, do we have to add language as to how they're staggered?
Yeah.
So that's not in here. So
we we're going to have to add
that. That's the thing. We figured that we're not going to, you know, sit here and discuss that back and forth. We know what the concept is, and you know, there would be there's five people that are on the board. Two of them will be there for 3 years.
Right. So if you get rid of the entire board, though, as of 12/31,
two would have a 1 year term, two would have a 2 year term, and one would have a 3 year term.
So
or whatever.
Or two would have.
I think that it's
whatever.
Like a round robin.
You
could lose.
There's supposed to be a seventh person appointed by the board itself.
That's right. We have six in there.
That's right.
So it's two, two, and two, right? 3 year through 2 year and a 1 year. Then the seventh person is appointed for how long? How long is the seventh person appointed? That is appointed as the from outside.
It would be 3 years, but the first one might be a different. We might have to think of the first appointment at a different number.
Well, because the rest of that board at that point is selecting the seventh, right? Like that's then you probably won't actually have that person just for the sake of the system itself. You probably then want that person then serving 1 or 2 years, so that way then the process is actually then at that point kicking in, right? Especially if that's
going to get more confusing then.
Okay, then you have them at three then.
No, I'm just throwing that out there that to me, the way that it's going to read, and forgive me, Nick, if I butchered the heck out of this, you know, all members shall serve for 3 years. However, you know, the two appointed by, you know, two of them, however we make it, you know, shall serve, you know, for you know, beginning with a 1 year term, and then two shall serve beginning with a 2 year term, and then two shall serve beginning with a 3 year term.
Okay.
And then once they're reappointed, they're appointed to a 3 year term.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the seventh member.
And the seventh member shall serve a 3 year term.
Okay.
Is that everyone comfortable with that scenario?
Fine.
I think I'm comfortable with it, but I'm not sure. I have to think about it a little more. All right.
Yeah.
That one, I agree with the staggering part. With the seventh person is the one person that I'm...
Well, I'm ambivalent, however we want to handle it.
I didn't think about that one, but I mean, right now we'll do, as you pointed out, we'll do that if we have to address that at another point. Mm-hmm. So we can move on. All right, then on page 9.
This is removal of board members. We had belabored this quite a bit. I just had a thought that's gonna throw it back into flux. What if the appointments of the legislature shall, you know, maybe removed for cause by a 2/3 vote of the legislature, and the appointments of the executive can be removed for cause by the executive? Wouldn't that make more sense than giving the legislature the only power to remove board members? I'm fine with pushing past it and just thinking about it for now, but to me that makes more sense in a fairness to all parties scenario.
Removal by approval of the legislature and the executive.
Go ahead, Hector.
I mean, both
for all of the appointments.
All right, let.
The one thing I would just say is that my own opinion, take it or leave it, but you know, there are already a million different instances where a legislative body is exclusively in charge of removal, right? At the federal level, you know, whether it's the president of the United States, a member of its own body, or a federal judge, you know, it still ends up falling upon Congress to kind of go and to remove an appointee of a president, right? Or a president.
Right, yeah. So I mean, so ultimately,
even though yes, we recognize the separation of powers, you know, there is still a bit of a charge to a legislative body for certain functions.
Right, and then that has to be with the idea that, as I often say, is the legislative body is a deliberative body. It's not they can't just to make a quick whim of a decision. Where a county executive could, in that manner. But out of doubt, does the legislative body do that? They don't. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't like the language removed for cause by the county executive, period. Because it gives it to one person the power.
Exactly.
And it's not just
exactly
their members. Not that I think a county executive would take it lightly, but I'm with Hector just in terms of, I think, the removal process should be the two-thirds vote of the legislature.
Yes.
It's a high bar. It's not something we would undertake. This body would undertake easily or lightly, whether it was an executive appointment or the legislative.
And if the executive requested the removal, they would probably go along with it, unless there's some reason.
Yeah, but I don't think you need to have to.
I don't think you need to write that in there.
Yeah, but if.
No, I wouldn't write it in there. I'm just saying.
Well, that was the pin.
If an executive came before the legislative body and said, look, I'd like to have this person removed before this.
Yeah.
I'm sure that, you know, if it was a. You know, wasn't some political cause, we'd probably deal with that.
I would imagine that coming in the form of a memo from the county attorney is my guess.
Right.
Yeah. And it's serious. I mean, two-thirds
so I agree.
Volunteer.
Yeah. All right. I agree with the idea, and that, as I've always said, we're a deliberative body. We can't act like that. We have to actually discuss things where it's different with the executive part.
Dave?
All right. Hey, Dave. Mark Ryder.
Yes, Mark.
Can I just bring up one point on that?
Sure.
I don't know where we are in the realm, because I haven't specifically talked to the county attorney on this as far as referendum, but I think at that point, if you're completely taking away the power of the county executive to remove anybody from this, then you're definitely in referendum, in the area of a referendum needed for this now, because you're removing a power.
Well, why does it read right now, Tracy? Do you have that?
I'm looking at it right now.
Currently, they serve with a pleasure, don't they?
They do not. They serve through a term of years.
Oh.
Is there a removal for cause?
There's a current removal.
What's the section?
I don't have it in front of me.
Does it currently allow for the executive to remove all
of this? I think that's the question, yeah. Which I don't have a current law.
I'm looking right now.
Actually, maybe I do.
Well, it was changed to be they serve at a term. And they used to serve strictly at the pleasure.
Correct. We changed that in 2012.
Right.
In a referendum.
Right. Well, that was you
it
and
says,
I.
It says, I have it.
Go
it says, after January 2009, members shall serve at the pleasure of the Ulster County Executive and may be removed from the office by the County Executive at his or her discretion.
Yeah, but that was changed.
That was changed.
That's the old law, right?
That's the old
that's
law.
That's what I'm looking on our site. So what was the change?
Yeah,
maybe that's not the old law.
It was changed to say that they serve as terms. They do not serve at the pleasure.
Is that in the code or the charter, Tracy?
And can be
removed. I'm looking at code right now.
But I'm not sure the removal process. I don't remember.
So that's code.
Could we ever change the code after we change the charter?
How we find these things.
Yeah, it should have been, but...
I don't think that the code was ever changed. That's what the problem is.
We changed the charter and they're in conflict, you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, you don't amend the administrative code. Then, yeah, I mean, it's although the charter trumps the code, though.
It does.
So.
So you have the code, the charter in front of you?
I was looking at the charter.
Yes.
So assuming that this problem is as Deputy Ryder presented it, would we have the same problem if we were requiring the two-thirds majority concurrence of the legislature? Probably would, I guess, because that would also be restricting the authority.
Well, we have to deal with the. I mean, I know what you're pointing out. You can't restrict the power. You can't change the powers without a referendum.
Yeah.
You can't even actually.
No, you can't add, curtail.
You can't add
transfer.
Transfer.
Transfer. Yeah.
It may be a moot point. I don't know what the county, well, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe
if there's
maybe
a referendum
may not
required
for other
for
changes
any
in this
anyway, but
I don't know if there's any.
So, yeah, I mean, in the charter, there are terms put in, but it doesn't speak to.
Yeah, but is it anything about serving as a collector of funds? Is it a
no
term?
No, it's to a term of years.
No, but then by it not saying that, by it not saying at the pleasure of, then therefore there's no usurpation of power, because at that point it just merely means they're being appointed to a term, and we're actually now creating a mechanism for said removal.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, I think Hector's correct, and if I recall this vague, because Ken, you were kind of instrumental in.
Yeah, it was actually Ken and I that did.
Yeah, it was Dave and I together.
Of putting in these terms, and I remember the discussion about the
executive
move on the executive power being too much. So we there is a record of our debate in terms of changing this charter to remove that power. If we have failed to change the code to reflect it, I feel like that's probably a technical.
Well, the code
wouldn't need a referendum because we had a referendum on the charter.
Yeah, I was going to say, the charter.
No, we have to actually do is probably pass a resolution to change the code.
So we need to
it'd be a local law to change the code, but yeah.
Right.
That's it. Yeah.
So we need to, no matter what we do, we need to change the code. But I don't think we're changing the powers if we've already changed the
power. No, so Nick, what we need is, Dave, we need to have something put in there that would... So we can change the code. We need to put a resolution together to change the code to reflect what the charter actually says, because we never did that.
Yeah, I mean that's like a cut and paste job.
Right, that's
that.
What we need. That cut
that's
and
totally
paste job.
What we're doing here.
So if you
but we're gonna have to change the charter and the code, so it might behoove us to do so at the same time in the same law.
Yeah, then I mean, it'd be moot. You want to do it twice? You can do it.
No,
twice.
You're fine. That makes sense to me. That's good.
Right. It's been since 2012 like this, so.
We have to change the code and the charter when we pass this anyway.
Right.
So
that's what I'm saying. We could do it once as a package, or you could do
rather than do it twice. Once as a package.
Yes.
But we need to add that.
Oh no, I'm totally queued up on that.
All right. Yeah. Next then. Then I think we're good with that, and we're going to move on.
Yep.
Discuss language replacing remove for cause. We just did that.
Yep.
And then on page 10, limiting circumstances when county attorney can issue advisory opinions.
So here's the question is, do we want the county attorney to advise the ethics board, or do we want independent counsel to advise the ethics board? Independent counsel would have to be hired by the ethics board. There'd have to be a budget line for it. I don't necessarily agree with having the county attorney and legislative counsel advise the ethics board, because I think it's going to get too convoluted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I will probably concur with the minority leader in so far as that, you know, we should probably have somebody outside of the scope advising. I have a great deal of respect for the current county attorney. I think the world of him and of that person. And so, but that said, just because I think the world of somebody doesn't mean that I think that it's appropriate at that point that they should be advising, being the sole voice to advise the ethics board. So I guess if it ends up sort of costing a touch of money, then it ends up costing a touch of money. And I don't know how often they actually need legal advice.
And I think it would be it's going to be a part-time position anyway.
I wouldn't think part-time position. I'm thinking contract.
That would make sense. Contract.
The county attorney. The board of ethics may engage outside counsel.
Yeah.
You know, in the subject to appropriations, in accordance with their duties.
Mm-hmm. Right, because I concur with both the two of you on that.
What it currently says is the board of ethics may utilize outside counsel under contract with the board of ethics.
I don't get that.
See, yeah, I mean, I'm okay with the county attorney advising if it's, but I think it gets murky when you have instances where it's advising on legislative members and staff, not even really staff, just members. I would prefer, as you know, for the sake of the legislature, for in that case, it to go out to contract.
I think the cleanest way to do it is vice versa.
I wouldn't want legislative counsel advising them on executive staff.
So I think the outside, the county attorney could advise on county employees, not counting the anybody that is politically is elected or some type of political office. But in other words, like for them to advise of the ethics of somebody on the Board of Public Works, DPW rather, somebody in the health department doing something inappropriate by allowing maybe somebody's records to go out in social services. I think the county attorney probably should advise. It would make sense.
Well,
but it wouldn't make sense for them. I think it would be contrary if it was they were dealing with you or me or the controller or the deputy controller or, in other words, somebody like that. I think that would be outside counsel. Yeah.
I just think the cleanest way to do it is to make everything outside counsel. I mean, when you think about it, the concern is that the county attorney represents us and the county executive, and they're weighing in on, ethics charges against us. The county attorney represents the employees as well. So I think that if there's a conflict with the legislature, there's also a conflict with county employees. I think that if we're not going to have the county attorney advising the ethics board on certain things, I think that we should have them advise them on nothing. And the ethics board should be empowered to hire outside counsel.
Tracy?
I mean, I think that if we do that, I'm not saying that I disagree, but if we do that, we need to have a budget line for this board. Because
absolutely, but you don't write that in the law.
No, I know, but I'm saying we need to be mindful because I don't think we currently do. We sort of think, well, okay, they'll...
It comes out of the county attorney's budget right now.
Yeah, they'll go... For, yeah, exactly, but we'd have to dedicate funds for it, no question.
Kevin?
So you're saying that Mark had his hand up.
Oh, all right, I'll get to Mark. Hector?
I just wanted to confirm that the chair was saying that she agreed as opposed to... that she didn't disagree with the double negative.
Marv, did you have something to say?
No, I just was going to say, I think the county attorney would prefer to be out of it. I think it would be cleaner for them, and they would prefer to not give the advisory opinions.
I think that makes sense.
I think they're on the same page.
They may have to, if it was someone in the administration, they might have to have an action otherwise too. So giving an opinion to the ethics board and then having to have some kind of be involved in some sort of disciplinary action as well.
Okay, that makes sense. I didn't really think about that end of it.
Being that it's currently allowable to cast aspersions on staff in our rule, on the floor of the legislature rules, this may alleviate one member of the executive staff from having baseless claims levied against them on the floor of the legislature.
Or ones with base. Alrighty, then we'll be ready to roll on?
Yep.
Yes.
Alright, so we have agreed that it's going to be outside, they're going to hire outside counsel as per appropriations.
Yep.
And the little reds are just weird little fixes.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. We move on.
Yeah, I think
okay. Or Joe also. Such employees.
We're looking for pins, right?
Yep, 30 days, that's okay.
13.
Now
page 13.
Page 13, we got the pin. How should findings and orders be made public?
What we had written was the board's findings and conclusions and orders shall be made public at a minimum by inclusion in the annual report.
Tracy, what do we have on what? How do they make it public now? What's the wording on it? If you got that in front of you?
Oh, it's not good.
All right, so let's ignore it.
we're just deleting
where
there's
no requirement that it be made public.
There's no I'll find it. There's no requirement, but the executive can release it if he or she wants. It's kind of what it
Who?
Is.
are you comfortable, Trace, with at a minimum by inclusion in the annual report?
I am. Where are
13.
We?
13.
Yeah, you got to fast forward to the pin.
Fast forward, I like that. It's Millennium Talk for go forward.
Sorry, what was that? That was what clock?
Millennial.
Yeah, I like the at a minimum.
That's very much a Gen Xer.
And what happens if, in other words, right now, when they do everything and
I got the current language trace if you want to.
Right now, they hear the case anonymously. They sit there, and then after they hear the case, then it is if they find the person guilty of these, you know, these ethics charges, they can release them if the county executive wants them released.
The report shall not be made public except by the county executive or by the unanimous vote of the board.
Right. So, having said that, in other words, that's extremely political, as we realize that it can be used very politically if we need to. So I think that's what we're trying to stop. So in this case here, what happens then, do you, in the annual report, do you put in that the charges against Kevin Roberts were found that he did not break any ethics laws?
Well, it says the board's findings and conclusions and orders shall be made public. So yes, if Kevin Roberts is found to have not committed ethics violations.
But if it was anonymous beforehand, so now it's anonymous, they go through and they find out that it was total bull. Now all of a sudden what ends up happening is when they do this at the end of the year, it's drawn attention to him that he was up on ethics charges.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even count advisory opinions, which is a different procedure. Advisory opinions right now are required to be made public, but they're required to be redacted.
Go ahead, Mark.
It says, if it is determined that the person who was the subject of the hearing violated the county ethics law. So they're only...
You only get to that point if you're...
They're only making it public if the county ethics law was violated.
There's a violation.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so then what we'll do is that they should be made public with the annual report, or should the ethics boards, if they find Kevin guilty... Do they immediately put it out, or do they wait? All right, let's get him an attorney so he's not found guilty. Go ahead, Tracy, hold on.
I was answering a question, but you're only having the order, I believe, after it becomes final, and we have earlier on or later on that it does not become final until 30 days late, or how did we word it?
There's a 30-day.
And then that would not include the, you know.
But Dave's point, sorry to interrupt, Ken. Dave's point is that what our current language says, as to what Mark pointed out, is that only if found guilty of violating the ethics law is it made public. We're now writing that findings and conclusions and the order shall be provided and made public. So that's even if you're found not guilty. A finding would be not guilty, right? Not guilty?
No.
Go ahead.
So no? I think what it would help is if we took this clause. If it is determined that the person who is the subject... It's on page 13...
Section 6.
7. So we... And the last sentence above
the
pin...
Oh, the last sentence, right. I got it.
Is... The last clause is, if it is determined that the person who was the subject of the hearing violated this county ethics law, the board's findings and conclusions and order shall be made public at a minimum by inclusion in the annual report.
Yes.
Okay. I think it will make it much clearer.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
All right, that works.
Okay, we also have to determine, is it in here in terms of advisory opinion? That was in our old law, and I think we would want to know what advisory opinions were issued. They're redacted currently, and that's the process, but I don't think, do we deal with it in this law?
I haven't seen that.
So, I mean, what it says currently in our current law is, advisory opinion shall be issued only with respect to proposed future action by a public servant, and then blah, 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 and then it says, the board shall make public its advisory opinions with such deletions as may be necessary to prevent disclosure of the identity of any county officer or employee or involved party. The advisory opinion shall be indexed by subject matter and maintained. I mean, the benefit of having advisory opinions public without the names is that we then all have the benefit of that information in terms of advice on how to proceed. So
we could add that to section 8 there below, where it says the board shall maintain an index of all persons to be found in violation of this county ethics law by name, office, date of order, you know, the index and determination of probable cause, and orders in such cases shall be made available for public inspection and copying.
Well, there's a section that deals with rendered advisory opinions on page 10. It's B. It says that the board shall render them, and so you could add there, and it says who opinions may be issued to.
Go to 11.11.7.3.
And it says they should be summarized as part of the annual report in section B.
Okay, do we want to have the redactions in there then?
Mm-hmm. Redacted as necessary to preserve confidentiality.
We can decide. I feel like we'll agree on this. We can decide on it later. We don't.
Yeah, I agree that they should be redacted.
Okay.
So as to
and we
empower
council to go and create.
So that language,
yes.
If is for council, that language is
page 11.
40, yeah, it's page 11. But in our current, it's section 44.
11. Sorry.
C. A. B. And C for you to cross-reference. And anything that you think is in A, B, or C that would be relevant or necessary to put in here and be on the redaction, we just highlight.
Yeah.
You
know.
All right.
All right. So are we finished with that, Ben?
No, I think Tracy might want to talk about employees have, you know, against, you know, Do you want to revisit having the findings forwarded to the supervisor?
I just think they should.
If it's
a negative, if you're found to be in violation, your supervisor should.
Yeah, the current law does that, I think.
Yeah, that should definitely be in there. Yeah,
makes sense.
Or department head, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. But somebody should know.
Supervisor, well, has it in there? Supervisor or department head? They can.
I think department head is probably because
without belaboring the language,
yeah.
You know, if it's already in our current law, I'm sure that we can.
That's true.
And then, in terms of elected officials that don't have supervisors or department heads, I guess that goes back to the making it public.
Yeah.
Because if you're in violation of the ethics law,
yep.
Logic. Unfounded.
Right.
We already dealt with the unfounded accusations. They're not.
Because the public is their supervisor in a sense. Mm.
Right.
All right. So.
I think that makes us done with that pin.
All righty. Very good.
What was the answer to should unfounded
no.
be?
We're just striking that pin out. It's already dealt with.
Oh, your pin. Now, your pin number.
Yeah.
Well, do we want to make it more clear though? I guess just to go when we're dealing with. The annual report or whatever.
It doesn't become a finding order or until it's founded.
Okay.
So
like a PC, there's got to be a PC.
Right.
Totally for me. Because
yeah.
I was reading it and then getting
things. All righty. So the next pin is on page 19.
You heard me. All right, moving right along.
All right.
The record reflect that we now have an awesome to balance out the previous groan.
Yes. It's like very zen.
I was worried when he left the room. I was worried he wasn't coming back.
That's it.
He'd had enough. Right. It was
striking section completely. So I could put events. Okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. We're back on the gift again.
I just think that disclosure is a proper form of.
I can move on this with the disclosure, and then if we have a giant issue and someone's attending tens of thousands of dollars of political events a year, we revisit it.
Yep.
As long as you're disclosing.
Or and highlight it.
And you're required to disclose
yeah.
it,
yep.
yeah.
so that not disclosing is a violation of the ethics law. Then
and then you
remove. I can. I can move on this, even though I don't feel
100% confident. All right, so we're striking that
back. Yeah.
But you're including the disclosure somewhere.
But we're gonna add language that includes that,
now where
you know...
Where are you going to add the language on that?
On the disclosure form. it would, you know, the same place where we have a gift section.
Where's it added in here, though?
I think it's going to have to be specifically highlighted. I mean, I think it should be in here. It should be in the ethics law saying all, you know, such event, whatever, something that says you're required to.
All right, now we're just going to cut that out, and then we're going to put down.
I would imagine at the end of this, we would say that gifts exempted under this section must be disclosed separately from.
But
how do you do that sometimes?
Must be disclosed on the annual disclosure form.
Do you
all right, so in other words, if somebody invites you to, you know, after you fill out your form, a month later you get invited to something and...
goes in the next year's form.
I know it goes in next year's form, but it was worth 50 cents. You know, not sure how you weigh it. I mean, you got invited to Mohawk, and they had like a little wine tasting thing, and you were invited there, so... you know, how much was it worth?
I mean, it's going to have a price on the ticket. When you go to a benefit, that ticket costs something. No question, and it says it right on it what the ticket costs. That's how much it's worth. Not all the rest of it figuring out. And
well,
I'm not really concerned about the rest.
How much is it worth for deduction reasons?
Nope. I'm talking about how much it's worth. How much would you have had to have bought the ticket for? You were invited to the, you know, the whatever snowball benefiting the ASPCA, and it's a $500 ticket. You need to disclose that you got that $500 ticket for free.
But what if they invited me because of a particular reason and I was going to speak there?
I still think you should have to disclose. I mean, I feel like speaking changes it.
The county executive gets invited and he sits there, he has a dinner with them, he talks about it, he speaks about it, and he's, you know, pointing out the need for everybody to do this and that and that.
The speaking part, I mean, I had...
So you're thinking disclosure on only A, is what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not in, the rest of them.
All right, so how about complimentary...
If you're taking part in the program, do you... Does that count?
That's in B. Complimentary attendance, food and beverage, sponsor of a widely attended event. Which is related to the attendee's duties or responsibilities, which allows the public official to perform a ceremonial function appropriate to his or her position, which would include speaking at an event.
No, read the first part of that again, because it's not widely, I mean, like, at that point, you know...
A widely attended event which at least 25 individuals other than the members, officers, or employees from the governmental entity which the public official serves, attend, or were in good faith invited to attend... And which is related to the attendee's duties or responsibilities.
But the problem is, but a $500, you know, ticket is not, I mean, like, it, yes, there may be a membership that can afford that, but it's not necessarily widely available to the public at that point. You know what I mean? So, like, I get, like, look, I mean, I...
No, they're not talking about the public.
It says widely attended, not widely available.
Okay.
Yeah.
And all it does is say that, individuals are other than members, officers, or employees in the governmental entity. So,
okay.
I think
you have to be, you do one of those. You have to do either A or B.
Yeah.
Because that $500 ticket clearly then at that point exceeds the $75. Then,
yeah. That's,
you know what I mean? That's
what
we end up in, like,
capture. And again, it's like,
I know,
if I were doing this on my own, I would not want to exempt those events, but.
So
I'm willing to give as long as you're disclosing them.
Yeah, so why don't we have it read something along these lines. Complimentary attendance, including food and beverage, at a bona fide charitable or political event, provided that such value shall be disclosed separately on the annual financial disclosure.
Would it actually be more than $75?
But that's what I'm trying to say. Like, how are we then resolving the issue of, you know, of the $75?
That's already... That internally is exempted because it's under $75.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's in...
Gifts under $75 are exempted.
I know, but
an aggregate of $75.
Yeah, well, that's also where...
But this is over and above the $75 gift. This exempts complimentary attendance at bona fide political or charitable events, given that, so long as there is a disclosure of said value.
There is a disclosure, but you wouldn't have to disclose it if it was under $75.
So if Dave is having a barbecue of $20 and then he invites me and comps me for a $20 thing.
Complimentary attendance exceeding $75.
I'm trying to go. I know. That's where we're...
Well, just put it, in other words, I want to make, in other words, because my mindset would be I don't want to, have somebody that's going to a couple of events, somebody giving them a hard time.
I get it. So.
You know, because they, they show up and, they want them to come there and say something, so they come and say something, they feed them and, give them a glass of wine and, all of a sudden, they got to make sure that they put this down.
So complimentary events exceeding an aggregate of $75.
That would be covered under B.
Yeah. So
there's two different.
Well.
Yeah.
You're only requiring disclosure for A, correct?
Yes. When there's no speaking role, when there's no ceremonial role,
if there's
yes.
a speaking role, it's under B, and then
correct.
You're not.
All right.
But complimentary attendance, you got to disclose.
Yes.
And we're not putting a dollar figure on that.
Exceeding $75 and in the aggregate, I'm fine not putting a dollar amount. But
you've got that next clause, including food and beverage, which I think refers to the value. So you could say complimentary attendance of a value greater than $75, including food and beverage.
Yeah, I think $75 should be thrown in there.
The food and beverage one, B, is only if you're performing a ceremonial role. It's not just like if I give you a free ticket to my fundraiser to come to my fundraiser. So in B, you have to be performing some ceremonial role in accordance with your official duties.
Okay. So we're going to jack that to 75.
All right.
We'll jack A to 75.
Got it. All right, so now we're running down to page 25, I think, is next.
Yes.
Including first degree relative
definition.
I feel
like I've been skipping ahead.
All right, so we're looking on page 25, the pen. Include first degree relative definition.
What does that mean? Does that mean?
This is, you wanted to include parents.
Yeah.
First degree. That's a term of art now.
Yeah.
I think that I said that out loud, and Jay put it down.
I don't know. I wanted to include parents.
You wanted to include parents in business dealings.
Yeah. I did?
I thought. Oh.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense to include children, but not include parents.
Yeah. I agree.
No, I think that's the
reason. It's not do as I say, it's not as I do.
Well, we just put parent or step-parent, right?
Is parent or step-parent good?
I'm good with it.
Excellent.
That's a subsection M.
Yeah, subsection M. The official or employee, their spouse, unemancipated child or sibling.
Parent or member
parent
of the household.
Or step-parent.
Parent, step-parent, or a member of the household.
All right.
Next. Now we're going down to page 30.
No, we have an issue.
No,
25. This may be
25 is what we just dealt with.
Yeah.
No, page 25.
No.
25 is the collective bargaining thing. So
I thought we agreed that we were gonna discuss this.
So is that okay?
Trace,
I'd like everyone else to know. So
yeah, I have a problem with allowing in our ethics law the voting on a collective bargaining agreement that impacts the household. And Tracy has a problem not including it. So in our law. So
and if I can explain, so our current law allows this exemption, but so does New York State ethics law, because and I think that the thinking is that it's not a unique benefit. So you're not voting on a unique benefit for your spouse or unemancipated child or whatever, and it would be in conflict with New York State's ethic law.
So it's not in conflict, it's just different.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to extend the New York State ethics law, and for a year and a half, I've not been voting on resolutions that deal with funding for programs that a family member receives services from that program. It's not a unique benefit to her at all. And I'm doing that on the basis of an ethics committee advisory opinion that I requested. So, I, when I originally received that advisory opinion, I thought that it was excessive. I thought that it went beyond. But there's no need for me to vote on anything that deals with programs that affect a family member. And I think there's no need for somebody to vote on a collective bargaining agreement that affects a family member.
There's an inherent difference between a program that we fund or that we receive funds from the state of New York and something as, like, for example, a contract with a union or such, because that actually gets back to the fundamental of the actual job in terms of these are actual county employees, right? Like, this is something that we actually have to go and approve in order to go and actually have a contract with the county, right? So it's not as if somehow it's not a unique program or a specific program in which it's actually dealing with a specific population or populations. Instead, this is literally the nuts and bolts of the actual county.
But Tracy?
Yeah, and I mean, I'll come back. Ken and I are going to talk in between. I don't know that we're going to move each other on this issue. But I also can come back with case law where it was challenged at the state level and in other communities and was upheld. But I mean, I agree with Hector, and I think that we also, I mean, I just, being able to vote on, for example, the CSEA contract and to support the CSEA contract and to support the discussion of it, if you're out of it, it's not just voting on it. If you're recused from it, then you have no discussion on any of it. And I don't think it's specific to one, but it's not specific to just your significant other or whatever. I mean, I think there's a thinking behind it, obviously, that New York State has allowed it to exist in the ethics law and the exemption to...
I mean, just because New York State allows it in their ethics law, I don't necessarily think means that we should. Mm-hmm. And to me, the whole idea of ethics laws is impropriety or the appearance of impropriety, mm-hmm. and also financial benefit. And there is a financial benefit to approving a civil service contract that increases compensation, could be decreasing benefits or increasing the value by which you have to contribute benefits. I think that there is a direct line from voting on a CSEA contract in which a family member is in the unit or a collective bargaining agreement where the immediate family member is in the unit and money flowing into that family's or household's pockets.
Where does your fiduciary responsibilities come in here? In other words, you're elected and you're dealing with a contract that was negotiated by the county executive in this case and the union. It had nothing to do, there was none of the negotiations or anything in that we as a body have any say in until the vote is there.
But you
we voted and that's our fiduciary duty to say, is that the right thing to do or wrong thing to do? In other words, what about us voting on our own contracts, our own pay?
We have to under state law, but
I know that.
And we can't change that. But let me to answer your fiduciary question. I actually think that allowing this could conflict your fiduciary responsibilities with your ethical responsibilities, because if, say, the responsible thing to do as a fiduciary of the county is to disapprove the contract, but the contract is raising your spouse, your unemancipated child's salary,
right,
then your ethical responsibilities conflict with your fiduciary responsibilities. And I think that that's one of the reasons that you write
probably,
that you don't write this in.
And then you would probably point that out.
I doubt that very much.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, but the logical extension at that point then becomes you can't vote on the county budget, right? Because at a certain point, you're also setting salaries, right, for departments. In certain cases, it's being done by contract. In other cases, it's actually not. Sometimes we actually go and increase various lines for different reasons. And by that same token, you've now gone and basically said that individual, because of their relationship with some other employee in the county, right? You're now basically taking away their ability to be able to vote on the budget, period.
No.
I'm saying there are specific things both within the budget and also the budget as a whole, right, goes and sets salary lines. I mean, like, at a certain point, you are, in fact, as that logical extension, it continues on. And again, I'm not here, by the way, to even go and say two wrongs make a right, right? You know, for a long time, we're just being candid, we had a lot of legislators voting on things that benefited all sorts of different relationships, whether it was sisters, cousins, sons, daughters, and the whole bloody nine, right? I think we tried to do the best we can now. Do you have a response to that or something? Like, I was going to say, because in the past we've actually had that happen.
Go ahead, Doug.
Whether it should have happened is different. But by extension of this principle, you're actually now basically saying to the legislator, you cannot go and vote on the budget.
I tend to hold that belief to that legislator Rodriguez just laid out. Also, just the fact that it's not, as a legislator, I'm not negotiating this contract.
Yep.
I'm not directly involved in the numbers, setting the numbers. It's a negotiation between the executive office and that union. Also, what I'm approving is an agreement that the executive's office has made with that union.
You're assuming you're approving it, though.
I could be rejecting it. It could be more beneficial. It could be equally beneficial to reject, technically, along the same approving or rejecting.
Yeah.
But, again, I did not negotiate that contract. Also, that union member paid for that service to have that contract negotiated through the union dues. You know, I think there's a lot of, I think, because of what Hector said, there's so many slopes, and I think that's why it's upheld in court. It's because there's been no true proof that there is an actual personal gain through a collective bargaining agreement.
I mean, again, one of the reasons that we're going to leave this as a pin until the next meeting is so Legislator Bartels can give me the research that she's got, and I can look at it with counsel. Because to me, it would almost seem like the exemption was upheld in court, but there's been no litigated right to vote, like an absolute right to vote on collective bargaining. There's nothing in case law that would preclude us from restricting legislators from voting on collective bargaining agreements. And then it becomes not a legal but a policy discussion. And again, I just think that the fiduciary dangers, the danger of a conflict between your fiduciary and ethical responsibilities, I think gives us a prevailing state interest to restrict it here, even if it's not restricted in other places.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hear what you're saying, Mr. Minority Leader, and I'm just so pleased to hear a Republican talk about how we can actually begin to read between the lines. I feel Anton Scalia right now is rolling over in his grave.
I don't think so, but okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, where are you?
May I just respond to Legislator Heppner's? I think Legislator Heppner's comments kind of focus the issue for me, because I can imagine a situation in which the contract that's been negotiated is felt by the relative of the member of that bargaining unit not to be sufficient. And if we allow them to vote, they could be the deciding vote. That person would be the deciding vote to say, we reject this contract.
Based on personal...
Yeah. Based on personal
they could
gain.
Be the deciding vote in many... or they could be the deciding
scenarios.
Vote to make sure something actually passes because somebody else has other problem with it. So,
right.
I mean,
but
a lot
why
of
do we have
there.
An ethics law in
all right,
the
so
place.
We're going to be looking at that. You're going to look at that, the 2 years, and come up with maybe a little better of an agreement. I'm sorry, Kathy, but you're not on the committee. I allow you to speak, but this is really a working group that we're trying to get through.
All right, page 30.
Dropping a pin in 25.
Yeah.
What is that?
Another pin.
We're just leaving the pin. We're not necessarily dropping a new one.
All right. Get your opinion. Double down on it.
Are you dropping any new pins?
All right.
Drop it like it's hot.
Double down on that one. Double pin on that one.
Did you hear it? Sorry, I couldn't help it.
No one heard it.
Oh,
it's just
it.
A pin dropping.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was a good one.
All right. I do not support
dropping the fines. It's a maximum
from 10,000 to 2,500 or something like that.
That was what the pin was. It was suggested that we might want to drop the $10,000 fine. I think that we have other fines that are well in excess of this. This is not, does not shock the conscience, and you don't have to. The ethics board has discretion. They could issue a fine from $0 to $10,000. That it's not like everything's going to be a $10,000 fine. In fact, I don't believe that they've issued a $10,000 fine. So that's where I come from on it.
Seven that we know of.
That was in three separate violations. It was 3,000, 3,000, and 1,000.
It's still a total of seven.
Yeah, but that's not what we're doing. This isn't a total, Dave.
No. That means it could be for 30 or something.
I mean,
it would be a maximum of 30,000, and
right.
It was.
So, then that becomes a pretty rough situation there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I guess my question, actually, I have two, through the chair to the minority leader. I'm trying to remember what did we actually set the maximum fine for the Human Rights Commission?
25,000.
All right. Can we actually discuss, as opposed to?
Want
to
raise 25,000?
No, that's not where I'm going with it. But that the because we actually just had a brief sidebar there with regards to a potential or particular case in which there were different forgive the term, I do apologize, almost like by the count or by charge, being charged a certain amount on this and a certain amount on that. I mean, is it cumulative? I mean, I guess are we talking about can we actually make it 10,000, meaning no more than $10,000? Where at that point we're actually making a cumulative, not to exceed amount?
No, because they can be brought on two or three or five charges.
Let's just go with this. Sorry, Dave. I'm bringing Dave up on 10 charges of, whatever, right? I was going to say baldness, but I'm going bald.
Guilty.
So, we're both going bald. But the thing where, you've got those 10 charges, and then at each instance, you're getting hit at $10,000.
Right.
That's $100,000,
I mean,
right?
That requires a lot of assumptions, though.
That
assumes that you're found guilty of all 10, that further assumes that a majority of the members of the Board of Ethics say that each of those charges warrants a maximum fine, at which point, I believe a judge in an Article 78 is likely to say it shocks the conscience and reduce it.
But when we're relying on a section,
like
an Article 78, if we're relying on Article 78 to basically be the only recourse to such excessive fines, whereas for example, I'm saying to you, we should probably then be discussing a cumulative amount that someone's going to be fined by this board, because now we actually are beginning to move off into substituting their judgment for what should basically be a judicial hearing.
Tracy.
At that point.
Yeah, I'm more comfortable with a lower number because it's a volunteer board.
Or a cumulative number.
Or a cumulative number. I do want to point out that it says not to exceed $10,000 or the value of any financial benefit. So I read
whichever is greater.
I read that as whichever is greater, but is that not correct? Like, what is
it? It says whichever is greater.
Right.
Whichever is greater.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the sentence, it says whichever is greater.
Whichever is greater. So, so that gives me a little more comfort, but I prefer a lower number, especially on
charge. I mean, you got to realize that they can find you can be found guilty by by voting in committee and
right,
then voting on the
no
floor.
Finance,
so that's two different.
No
that's two
benefit,
different
yeah.
That you get brought up on.
You can pile on,
and they discussed it in caucus, and now that's three. So now all of a sudden you got $30,000 for one violation.
Yeah.
What about making it not to exceed a cumulative value of and then increase that number?
I don't know. This is an ethics board. It's not. Is it, you're not being brought up. In other words,
you're not in court.
If you go beyond that,
but you
then
go
you go to court.
But and yeah. can I just
somebody's going to bring up they may bring up
no
criminal charges or civil charges as opposed to this. There is a mechanism.
No, there's not.
If they turn around and say you did this, this, and this, somebody else can turn around and use that.
Not if there's nothing illegal. Unethical doesn't mean illegal.
Go ahead. I mean, I think we want the penalties to be...
Reflect what they did.
No, I mean, we want them to be substantial. And I think $2,500 per violation or the value of the gain is substantial. I mean, that's a lot of money. We know what legislators make. And so, but beyond that, the idea that it could be a pylon, as Legislator Roberts calls it, a pylon could be solved with an Article 78. Yes, it can, but an Article 78 comes with a cost. You have to, if you're not yourself an attorney, you have to hire an attorney.
It'll run you about $5,000.
It costs real money.
So even to fight these things, it's going to cost $5,000 of your own money. So that's my concern about it. And it is a volunteer board, and it's not, you didn't commit a crime.
All right, how are we going to come to a consensus?
I don't consent to reducing the fines.
What do you think it should be?
You know, every time we had one of these boards, I fought for a lower fine.
So I'm thinking the 25 makes sense to me. I mean, I'm good with that.
You're not.
$2,500 is
what's,
I think.
The number, where can you come to?
I mean, I don't not support it at $10,000. I mean, that's
trying to get a consensus. Is there a number you can feel more comfortable with?
I got to think about it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
$5,000. But I'm not. But if we're gonna reduce it to $5,000, I'm not gonna consent to a maximum.
An aggregate.
Yeah.
So then
I also
they can do the piling on, you know, get you
absolutely
like three or four different votes. That you
yeah,
to,
absolutely.
The
if
same
you commit
issue.
If you commit separate violations, then
that's on the same issue. Like for instance, the one that we know of, the person voted in committee and on the floor.
They're
and
separate
that was
actions.
Two different actions, but it was on the same issue, the same vote.
Dave, I actually think if in an instance where you have four separate actions voting on the same issue, in the end. If I were on the ethics board and reading this as it reads right now, I would read it that you couldn't exceed the value of, if it's all the same benefit, it's all voting on the same financial benefit to you, then the maximum fine would be the financial gain, right? I mean, that's the way you think per each one, the financial.
They're putting in the financial gain, because the financial gain could be $60,000. Let's go away from the one issue that you know about, but let's say there's an employee that stole $60,000 to $100,000 from the county.
That wouldn't be an ethics violation. That would be a
criminal.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah.
Well, let's say a Maserati ended up in my garage. You know.
That also would be a criminal.
Not if it was obtained through like an aggregation of gifts or something that were not disclosed properly. And then, so they're saying we're not going to limit it to $10,000.
Let's say that they were building Maserati of Ulster County, and as part of the siting of Maserati of Ulster County in, say, Gardner.
You got to comp the car. Yeah. It's an absurd example, but it could happen.
That's not there wouldn't be criminal charges.
No.
The grader is actually
it's a gift. Yeah. I mean, it's a really good one. But
if you stole the Maserati, that would be
yeah, that, but that's illegal.
Significantly
right,
criminal.
Think about it. How about we try?
All right, but you know, I really want to get this thing done. And on my agenda forever.
I do too. Yeah, I do too. But I just don't know that we're gonna. Maybe a little time and a little conversation.
I don't know.
Ken, you're saying you'd go to five, but no.
But no
aggregate number. Kevin, where are you?
I'd like to cap it somewhere around 25.
I like 25.
I don't know that I can support it.
And just $25 for an ethics yard.
That would be 2 years' salary.
I understand.
Yeah. If the person is using the position.
But you're only thinking about a legislator.
Yeah,
it's not 2 years' salary for the executive or the comptroller or the DA or.
That's a good point. And they're more likely.
Yeah, but they're also. Okay, but. We also have the ability at that point to go and remove this legislature that at that point can go and remove a sitting executive or controller, right?
No, we can't.
Not a comptroller, but we can remove an executive. There's a removal process for an executive in our charter.
Yeah.
not the comptroller, not the DA, not the clerk.
Although, well, I think public office of law at that point would probably go and kick it.
Only if they've committed a felony.
It's illegal. That's why you have ethics laws.
We'll look in. We should probably go and look into that.
Does everybody have an ethics board? All the counties?
Most of the towns do now, and I don't know of a county that doesn't have one.
Dutchess County just read. Did theirs, I think.
No, but they still have one. I mean, I'm also not going to sit here and say that I know definitively that every county does.
I don't know if they do either.
I assume they do, but that's...
It's not worth it to me to look into.
Well, my mindset is, I'd like, you know, what are the fines in the other counties? What are they running?
You know.
Well, this is modeled after
Orange,
which put in the 10,000. But I feel like they may have modeled it after Orange.
I think ours has 10,000.
Yeah, ours has 10, and I feel like Orange was looking at Orange.
And I don't believe that they've been punitive.
Maybe our clerk's office could go and, you know, pull together all the
why?
Counties we get in at that point now.
I hope we would not ask them to do that.
Yeah, I feel like we can come to some agreement.
Well, maybe you can grab a couple of them. Just getting a few.
We have Orange County.
Idea. You have Orange County. Maybe hit what Dutchess has and Sullivan or something like that. Yeah, just a couple of dots in Valley.
Someone throws me a Kenny's. It's too far away.
Hmm?
Nothing here.
Yeah.
All right, we'll think about it.
All right, we're on. All right, down the bottom. Spin. On page
relative 40. Efficacy.
No, you have the third bullet of the first pin.
Yes. There is a requirement already that the complaint be signed, Trace, earlier in the law.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that we can eliminate that one.
Yep.
We have to add the section on the administrative hearing officer.
That was administrative hearing officer, I think, was a suggestion about fines that were of a certain value, but I could be wrong about that.
That's what I remember.
But that's the thing that, yeah, but my mindset is if you're going to fine someone, you, rather than having somebody have to file an Article 78, which is quite costly, is there an ability for them to go before someone else?
Well, then maybe we can withdraw the aggregate amount so the hearing officer is still there.
I mean, is there a possibility just to say, hey, look at this, is excessive, and you know, this is the problem?
I don't know. I mean, like that's
I think the articles. I think Article 78 is the proper mechanism to appeal. Usually, you don't have an administrative hearing officer to appeal things necessarily. You have an administrative hearing officer to assess fines.
Yeah, I thought there was a criminal law. I thought we did.
In the which law?
Recycling law, and I think in polystyrene foam,
it could be.
There's an appeals process in place.
I mean,
should we look at
we
that
should,
language?
Yeah.
You're going to end up in.
We should probably maintain the pin.
So the hearing officers.
Yeah, I mean, I.
Right.
You're
going to
end up there anyway.
So this is what we're essentially doing here. If we.
All right.
If we add. Oh, sorry. You telling me to stop?
Yes.
Okay.
Dave?
As a general rule, if you put in an administrative appeals process, it doesn't. It doesn't remove the need, the time frame to file an Article 78. So if you're thinking about possibly relieving somebody of the cost of an Article 78...
I'm not. But go on.
I am.
Yeah, you may find that it actually works negatively, because you'll find that they have to do both.
Yeah, actually, you could confirm this maybe, but you may actually be setting a trap, because there could be a defense of failure to exhaust remedies. So let's say we have a remedy here, which is go to your administrative hearing officer. They don't go. They go straight to an Article 78. They say, sorry, you didn't exhaust your remedies. Mm-hmm. You have no remedies. So it's like, you know, there's a developed process here. Go to the Article 78.
So it creates a catch-22 then.
Could be a problem.
One way or another, you're either spending a lot of money or you're looking at a catch-22.
Oh, I have some answers on the fines in a minute. So I'll talk this
one. You're also passing costs on to the county, because the county is who's hiring.
Right, here's another layer.
Hearing officer.
Yeah.
Well, I'm more concerned with the other part.
It would cost money, but you could set it up that you could specify that a final judgment is not reached until the administrative hearing officer has ruled or the person has declined to file. And that way you wouldn't trigger the Article 78 clock until that point. you could give them 30 days to file with the hearing officer, and if they don't, then that's a final determination. And if they do, then it's not a final determination.
I think what he pointed out was he may end up creating a catch-22 that it may not be worth doing.
I think Kathy's trying to avoid the catch-22, but I'm not sure.
I'm not sure that it does. Ultimately, it doesn't, though, because I don't think.
All right, Tracy, you've been talking about what now?
Oh, so I looked up Albany County. Albany County, if you're in violation, you're guilty of a misdemeanor, it says. And then it also says that it's a civil penalty of up to $2,500 for each violation, and that there are damages. So if you're liable for damages to the county for any losses or increased costs as a result of the violation. That's Albany County.
Making it a misdemeanor is worth a lot of money. Yeah, I'd rather pay a big fine than have a misdemeanor.
Yeah, I don't want to do the misdemeanor, but they're $2,500.
But they're $2,500.
And
a misdemeanor.
What?
And a misdemeanor.
All right, I'll agree. $2,500 and a misdemeanor. Fair enough? All right, then.
The other thing, I don't know how they can get away with creating it as a misdemeanor, but...
Because we can.
It does say to the extent provided by Section 8 of the general municipal law.
You have to fit within municipal law. There's other things. Just the ethics board saying, all right, well, that's a misdemeanor. Call me a cab. Okay, you're a cab. I mean, you know, it's like one of those things.
Yeah, that's a bad law.
I mean, to the extent.
Be that as it may.
But
using that as, well, they have a $2,500 fine isn't necessarily.
But what they also added was damages.
Yeah. I understand.
I don't have a problem with that. In other words, $2,500 plus damages, if the county loses money and things like that because of that ethics charge, I don't have a problem with that.
If somebody votes on a collective bargaining agreement, passes by one vote, it could be an increased cost of millions of dollars to the county.
Well, that wouldn't work because there's so many other exceptions to that one. Go ahead.
There's more. Any person, whether or not a county officer or employee, who intentionally or knowingly violates any provision of this local law may be subject to a civil forfeiture to the county of a sum equal to 3 times the value of any financial benefit he or she received as a result of the conduct that constituted the violation. So what is that, trouble did?
That's on his job. That could get
3 months
or
all.
All
that could get very... I mean, if it was $60,000, you're up to some pretty big numbers from 3 times.
So that's why they're so
$10,000 seem pretty tame, huh?
I guess that's why they're so ethical in Albany. all righty. Anyway, the other one, the note, the 120-day limit for Article 78 proceeding, is that how everybody was
that
in
was
agreement?
That was just a point that minority counsel made if you were considering adding an administrative hearing officer section, just to keep in mind there was the 120-day limit.
Right, which I think that's what
the same point we
were
making.
Okay.
So.
All right, so we're going to be sticking with what we our sticking point, shall we say, is the fine number.
And
the other stuff is taken away.
And the collective bargaining. Those are the final two.
I mean, on this particular bin,
Yeah. Those are the two that we have.
On this particular
bin. Then we have a couple of things that I think we're going to agree on.
Now, this bin, right, the next bin, I am unsure what this one's about.
Yeah, I was tired.
That's fair.
At that point, when I wrote that.
What do you mean, the last one?
I believe it is in reference to disciplinary action. You're still on 30.
Yes.
Under Section D.
That's how, like,
I think a warning, reprimand, suspension, removal, or other authorized sanction may be imposed in addition to any other penalty contained in this section or in any other provision of law, and I believe the conversation was, what's the relative efficacy of that particular...
Okay, we were talking about the leaving this in there pending the passage of some sort of a code of conduct, which would allow, but there is suspension, removal, or other authorized sanction against employees can be taken. Mm-hmm. So I think it behooves us to leave this in there, because we, it says, or body authorized by law to impose such sanctions. If there's no body authorized by law to impose the sanctions, then it's moot.
but there are areas of the county that are covered under the ethics board, like the employees, which have the ability to be suspended or removed by law when allowed by collective bargaining, blah, blah, blah.
So, are you telling me in this case here, I'm a little confused with this. Now, would it, like, for instance, would a county legislator be able to be removed by the ethics board?
No.
No, it doesn't seem to say.
No.
Yeah, the section is specifically saying.
Right? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
But a county employee, a DSS employee, may, under their collective bargaining agreement and the authorization that's given to the county executive, be removed, suspended, etc.
Right, okay.
Is there a question for either majority or minority council? Under this language, though, would a legislator be given the option of removal or...
Option?
Yeah.
They could always resign. I think that's what there was a choice offered in the most recent case you were just discussing. But
I think that goes back to what Legislative Robert said before about the difference about being like about piling on, where you can create a scenario where as a duly elected official, that could be put in a situation where it's, you know, is it really worth that level of fine versus. That's why I'm just curious, because I prefer that removal of office would not even be within any type of jurisdiction of the ethics board for a duly elected official.
Well, they're not in there.
No, but they're allowed to give the option.
Not really. I think they were
in
violation. I think they were in violation.
That's what I'm curious about going forward.
Well, that's about to be litigated, and
I'm just curious about the language going forward. Is there a way to address that situation? Because I find that situation concerning.
I totally agree with you in terms of the concern, in terms of that situation, but I don't think there's anything in our existing law that allows for that option to be floated by our board. I mean, the one problem with not being more clear is we know that we don't have the authority to remove a legislator. We know that the ethics board doesn't have the authority to remove a legislator for these reasons, or an executive or a sheriff. But apparently our sitting ethics board doesn't, because I received a letter saying, essentially, boil it down, why haven't you removed the legislator? You know what I mean? So, like, why haven't I removed the legislator? Why haven't you read general municipal law? You know what I mean? I can't remove the legislator. So if we could be more clear in this, just so that that's Jonathan's point.
I'm speaking to the future language of that.
Yeah, for the future, so that no one who's sitting on the ethics board will think that that's an option, simply because here it says one of your options is to, you know, suspend or remove.
As allowed by law.
So this,
right, I get
this
it, but we're
section.
Dealing in a reality that's already happened. You know what I mean?
But
this section should deal separately with county officers and employees, because they're very different. And right now it's trying to use same language to deal with both.
Right, and I think that's what has to be separated. I think you have to separate that from county employees and county that's got to be separated.
I
think that was the point.
Whatever.
Was the way they read this. They were saying, and they go, well, okay, well, you can resign or pay X amount of dollars. I mean, to me, that was like a blackmail kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're answerable. You can't undo an election.
I think it's worded this way to be intentionally broad, in the sense that, let's default to what other law permits, whether it's your collective bargaining agreement or the civil service law, or in the case of an elected official, general municipal law. So you're not kind of going through with an exhaustive list. Look, there were things maybe or that could be done. I don't know that an either-or resign was one of them, but we kind of default to the rules of the legislature, or we default to Robert's rules. We didn't do any of those things.
But Nick, couldn't you, in other words, right now in this case here, this is perfect for employees, but not for an elected official.
Well, that's why we said we need a code of conduct. I think the solution is to then come up with a code of conduct that has some teeth in it, as opposed to doing it here. But that's,
A policy decision?
Right, that's kind of my...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the way this reads currently actually is a little confusing, just in that you know, here it says may be warned, which basically authorizes that they can warn, reprimand, suspend, or remove, and or be sub. So it's saying definitively they
remove
can do any
from
of those
office,
things.
Remove
and,
from
right,
office.
Right. No. I'm
employment.
Saying that, but I'm saying it's followed by an and or. It doesn't say. It doesn't finish that thought with as allowed by law. It says you can warn, reprimand, suspend, or remove from office, and or you can subject them to any other sanctions that are authorized by law. So the read, if I'm just a layperson, I read it that, okay, this is giving me the authority to suspend or remove from office anybody that I find guilty as part of... So I think we need
to
be more clear.
I think it does, too.
It's too confusing. Too liable to confusion.
It's clearly too confusing based on the situation we've gone through and the letters that I received.
Whatever. Be that as it may, there's nothing that precludes Derek from sending you a letter saying, why haven't you suspended Joe Maloney? It doesn't, you know, it does not change the ability of him to send that letter to you, which I think is your goal here. You're using that as a specific instance, though.
The letter is secondary to the fact that actually that was one of the things that he suggested we do.
There's nothing that says that they couldn't put it in there. I mean,
no, but if there,
yeah.
We shouldn't have language in the ethics law
that
implies
allows think,
that the legislature
yeah.
has that capacity.
Fine.
If we don't.
Yeah. Which I've already said.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, which I think is a disservice to the ethics board members themselves.
So
I don't think that it's a disservice.
I think that disciplinary action, I think that D, I think we need to split that between employees and elected officials because there is some significant differences between them.
Agree, Nick?
Yes. Agreed. Yes, whatever the sponsor has instructed us to do.
Sponsor?
Whatever.
Right, that's the point that I'm at. So, yield on this, Ken. Can we move on? Split.
That's what whatever means. What, whatever the boss says.
All righty, here we go.
We're going to
34.
Stop. Split county officer / employee.
34.
The bottom of... No, let me see.
Oh, this is about... we already
but
dealt with this.
We talked about this. We have to add that one part in, right? For council to incorporate, and we have that.
Requisite changes to the charter and code throughout.
Yeah, well, like, when this becomes final, then yes.
I think it's as final as it's going to be.
Yeah. There's still a couple pins.
Jay,
you got some pins?
I got pins.
Are the fines and the collective bargaining included in the charter and code? Those are the remaining pins.
I don't think the fines are.
They're not covered by it.
I'm sorry. This is the problem of me doing on-the-fly research on the fees with Albany. But I noticed in Albany that they, and we don't have to do it right now, I just want to put it up, that they have a process for someone aggrieved by the advisory opinion process to file an Article 78. It just says that you can file an Article 78.
Who's going to file an Article 78 to argue with an advisory opinion?
It doesn't hurt because if you feel that you... If you got an advisory opinion that you feel now I'm restricted in my duties and I'm not able to vote on 10 things at every legislative meeting and I don't agree...
Dave just said it costs $5,000.
Unless you're an attorney or can file the paperwork.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can file the paperwork. I mean, it could cost you $5,000.
You can go back to the ethics committee.
If they're going to argue the case, I mean, it's not going to. It may not cost you $5,000 just to file the paperwork. It's not going to cost you that, but you're going to have to say yes.
I do it whether you put it in the law or not.
Whatever.
All right, Mark.
Can I just add that pot number is $10,000 and a misdemeanor? $10,000 for violation.
Duchess is $2,500.
Too easy.
Also, $2,500 in making a false statement.
You can get a misdemeanor under this law, but it has to go to DA.
Yeah.
You can't do it for a violation.
Right. No. All right. Anything else on this, or can we move on to the next three other resolutions?
267.
All righty, 267, resolution 267, amending the rules of order to prohibit personal attacks.
I'll move it.
I second it.
If you'd like to.
I think you want me to.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate your support.
All righty, on the resolution.
What's that?
Consider...
Well, I respect the intent
I think in talking to some other legislators, there was, you know, concerns about the actual resolution itself. I'd like to make a motion to postpone.
Well, I'll wait. Mr. Hepner's made a motion to postpone.
Oh, I'll second.
There it is.
Oh. Okay.
On the motion, is there specific language that they find a concern with that changing of which would change their mind?
I mean, I'd be happy. I mean, you can talk to other legislators. That there was a discussion two caucuses ago on this, more so than the last caucus. But, I mean, we outlined a handful. We had a long conversation with Majority Council about...
Legislative Council.
Legislative Council. How do you know it wasn't Chris, though?
They're both listed as Legislative Council.
But, no, there was just, you know, concerns about what this would mean for our body, whether or not it was even, if it even was doable in the first place, in terms of freedom of speech in certain aspects. Then it actually brought up even current questions about our current rules in certain instances. So I think at this point, you know, our caucus wasn't in a position where there was any support to move forward on this resolution. For numerous reasons.
And I think also there was a discussion about the code, you know, the potential for a code of conduct that might handle some of this. I mean, I think we definitely had a discussion about the specific language of inflammatory comments and how that's determined, since the latitude is given to the chairperson. There was a back and forth on it. I mean,
that's fine that there was a back and forth in your caucus, but I just encourage you as the majority leader at your next caucus, which would be tomorrow, to encourage your caucus members to reach out to myself or Legislator Waltman or come next month, because this was postponed last month based on there being concerns. And since then, and since the previous caucus, as you'd mentioned, nobody's reached out to myself or Brian.
Were there any changes made those concerns or any?
I said nobody's reached out to us with concerns, so I would.
I thought you said there was concerns discussed when this was postponed.
No, there were concerns there. At last month's Laws and Rules meeting, it was mentioned that we were postponing it because there were concerns, but none specifically were levied.
That was not at that meeting.
None specifically were brought to the table, so. And then none have been brought to the table in the intervening time, so I would hope that before the next Laws and Rules meeting, so we can have an up or down vote on this, I think that it would behoove legislators who have specific concerns about language to reach out to myself or Brian or come to this meeting.
I'd be happy to compile it.
That's all I got, Dave, on the postponement.
All right, well, but there's most people feel that it may end up, stifling debates to a point. And not only that, how do you, when do you say if something is, if they're making a comment that is they believe is true?
I could believe the Earth's flat. Does that mean that I should say it out loud? I don't know. It's fine.
I mean, I just think you're dealing with things that don't need to be dealt with.
I disagree. I know.
I think it's the overreaching, and in some ways gives the chairman too much. In other words, they make the decision if it's...
And can be overruled by a majority of the legislature, as in every other ruling that the chair makes.
Supermajority.
No, it's a majority.
So, all right, so anyway, on the postponement, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
No. And the clerk, please note that the postponement is without consent.
Got it.
Wait, was the last one?
All right,
it was.
Three.
All
right, so we're on two.
Okay. Resolution 268, Article of the Code of the Ulster County be held in, and this is...
Term, no.
Oh, no.
This is the environmental.
Oh.
This is lower. Yeah, this
control.
Is
Is this the refuse one?
Yeah, I think
so. Move it.
I'll second it for discussion.
All right, now, is this, has this been discussed in, it has been discussed in Energy and Environment, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's discussed in caucus as well.
Passed there?
Yeah. We, the chairwoman, myself, and Legislator Ron discussed this a little bit today. There was a question brought up from the Republican caucus regarding...
non-regulated clean
not
fill.
Not the definition of non-regulated clean fill. And the scenario is brought up, for example, if you live in the southern part of the county, you were doing a project at your house, could you bring in, you know, if you were doing a farm or something, and you, could you bring in soil?
Or leveling your yard.
Leveling your yard. And so, from talking with the sponsor, it was, I think, a fair point, and, you know, if you disagree, we could talk further, but that essentially this is an anti-importation law for landfilling as a set. So it's not set like, so if you work at a golf course or if you work at a farm, it is not prohibiting the import of that.
I think it is, because I don't think it's the...
I'm happy to talk about that. Was the sponsor had an event in the district, so that's how they put it forward.
Right. Can I just... I think that the reason that the sponsor is passing or is proposing this law is more specifically to stop the importation of, like you said, stop the importation. But they're doing so by adding things that are going to be defined as landfilling, which is going to include non-regulated clean fill. I mean, council can help me out on this. I think that they're unintentionally saying that if I get a load of clean fill from Walden and it falls under the definition of non-regulated clean fill and put it in my property, it is being landfilled in Ulster County.
I mean, I don't see that. The one thing is, when you look at the legislative intent, it clearly states that from being landfilled within county borders. I think there's a pretty clear definition of landfilled versus being used for a foundation, et cetera.
I think that you'd need to look at Chapter 304, Solid Waste, Article 1, Use to Disposal Sites, and find out what that says, because I believe what that'll tell you is that it's saying importing things into Ulster County and having it permanently reside there.
Tracy.
I mean, I think so. It's amending the definitions of refuse, right, to include C&D, but it's as it relates to refuse from outside the county. That's the intent, which is 3043.
Yes.
And 3043 says no refuse originating as such outside the county of Ulster, which has been collected or otherwise obtained outside the county of Ulster and transported or otherwise delivered within said county shall be deposited or caused or allowed to be deposited in any refuse disposal area within the county of Ulster. So if you have clean fill, it's not in the definition of refuse, and if you're bringing it to my house to fill a hole because I live right across the county line, I don't literally, but I live right across the county line of...
I do.
This, you do, and someone's doing some work in Orange County, and they say, hey, Ken, do you need this? I got a whole big pile of dirt, and I see you're doing some work in your yard. Do you need this pile of dirt? That's not going to be... It's not in even the amended form of refuse, and you are not a refuse disposal area.
Then so why are we adding regulated clean fill to the definitions in the first place? What's the purpose of it? Because there's got to be a purpose for it.
I think the purpose of it...
You're in a different section, because it says 304, Article 1, Section 34-2. Definitions shall be amended to include new definitions to read as follows.
What it's adding is construction and demolition debris.
That's and non-regulated clean fill.
Right.
Section 2 definitions.
I see that there's a definition for non-regulated clean fill, but the amendment, the definition, blah, 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 shall be amended to read as follows. Refuse. Go to the bottom, the B.
I understand that they're changing the
the term refuse as well, but they are also adding the term non-regulated clean fill.
They're adding the term, but it's not in the definition of refuse. So it doesn't apply to what's coming in and being dumped on your property, because they could come up with a definition for fairy dust, but it's not in the definition of refuse, which they've added construction and demolition debris.
I understand. My question is, why are we adding the definition of non-regulated clean fill and not the definition of fairy dust?
And Nick?
I can't answer that question. But it doesn't apply to anything in the rest of the...
I'm not sure that it doesn't apply to anything.
All right. Let me hear from Nick, please.
Yeah, no, I would be guessing, because I'm not the sponsor, didn't draft this, but as I'm reading this, what it's doing is defining by exclusion. So it's saying, by the way, in a very limited universe, this is the only thing that shall be considered non-regulated clean fill. Everything else in the universe goes into that catch-all title of refuse, because you have very broad things like other contaminant materials. And non-regulated clean fill is like it's got to be essentially pure. You know, so that's what I'm guessing.
Can we not have...
I'd like to remind the committee that we're here to debate whether this is going to a public hearing, not to get into the fine print. So if we have a lot of confusion about this, maybe we can invite the sponsor.
We did, and she couldn't make it.
So
we can call her on the phone.
I'd
like to have a postponement.
Motion to postpone. I'll second that motion.
But can I ask? I mean, since we know this is a critical issue right now, and since we're setting a public hearing, can I ask that we move it forward? And in the interim, we can call Laura right now, and you can talk to her, or you can talk to Laura.
I don't have a problem setting a public hearing.
Because I see your point, Ken, on why is that definition there?
It also says free of any other odors. Does that mean that cow crap can't be in it?
I think the critical part of this change is that refuse now includes construction and demolition debris.
That's really
before
nice problem,
this
but.
It doesn't.
She's in an event right now.
She said to call. She told us to call her.
I'm just calling her.
Because the previous language said garbage, rubbish, industrial waste, and dredge material.
Hi, you're actually on the phone with the entire Laws and Rules Committee.
Oh, am I really?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have to behave myself then. Okay.
Well, I don't, but whatever, it's fine. Anyway, more importantly, we have a question here on Mr. Minority Leader. Do you want actually going to go and just sort of verbalize? No, you don't.
Huh?
Do you want to verbalize the question or just?
I mean, I can verbalize the question. Stop me if I'm wrong, Ken. The definition for non-regulated clean fill that you're adding, it's a new definition?
In section 2?
I added it to the definition as part of the total control of solid waste. I'm kind of rethinking that. It's clean fill that's not regulated, it's sand, it's compost, it can be any of that. And then that would not be considered a landfill, but anyway,
but Laura,
the intent was to keep the regulated stuff out. That was added, and so it would fully encompass everything. I don't think that my feelings would be hurt if it was taken out.
She was actually not on mute. Laura was just going and just going. Anyway, so if we delete out non-regulated clean fill,
that definition,
you're okay with it, right?
We just add.
I'm okay with that. Yeah.
Make a motion that we amend this to remove the definition of non-regulated clean fill.
All right.
Second.
Is there anything else we need to leave while I'm on the phone with her?
No.
All right. We're good. Bye.
Bye.
That was a long discussion about it.
I know, we could have gotten through very quickly. Well, she's an expert on this stuff, so, you know, whatever.
Compost would not fall under that because of the odor.
Come on, let's get done.
All right, so it's been moved, and it's got non-soil constituents.
Come on, I want to get focused back on this. All right, so there was a motion made to remove that, and seconded by After, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 What's that?
Any opposed? None.
Now
on the resolution.
That's right, Kathy. Yeah, we need to withdraw the
non-regulated clean fill.
The motion to postpone.
So stricken.
Withdrawn.
Thank you.
Harry.
Yeah, I already wrote that down. On the resolution.
On the resolution.
Aye.
Aye.
As amended.
As amended.
Because you
should. All right. Fine. All right, the next one is a resolution 269, creating term limits.
Move it.
Second.
All right, on the issue. Of course, you know where I stand on this. I'm against it, except for certain positions. I agree, like our Constitution agrees, that in the executive, not legislators. Right. Executives can amass power, legislators don't. They just amass knowledge.
Call a question.
Did somebody move it?
But I'll.
I moved it.
He moved it. I
second. Yeah, we moved it. Moved it second.
I'll like to make a friendly amendment.
Oh, dear. You're kidding, right?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
If we could change six consecutive terms, so somebody could possibly run again after the 14th year.
I don't agree with that. I think we talked about that a couple of times.
I think, yeah, it was definitely a scenario that was.
Someone could run for their whole life with it with 2 year breaks in between. I just.
We're only legislators. We're not like all
brain surgeons.
Presidents sitting around here.
No, we don't amass power.
Don't worry, Kev. You get 12 more years after this. It's all right.
The point is, that's not the point, though.
I just want another two.
That's not the really not the point. Is you made the point on Amitai. You made the point that you should have 4 year terms because people get to learn and understand the job.
12 years is plenty.
Well, I'll tell you what. We keep on learning on this job.
Be that as it may.
And I understand the process for that, and I really do understand the mindset of term limits. I understand it particularly, it's in like an executive that amasses power because, they end up controlling, they end up maybe controlling the party, and then so on and so forth, and becomes, it's a whole different ballgame. Legislators just amass more knowledge. They don't have any more power out of it. Yeah.
I agree completely with Legislator Donaldson on the issue. However, we had set up as a body to put term limits on a referendum, which we're not allowed to do. And though I agree completely on the issue, I feel that we need to pass this in order to have a proper process. And then a new legislative body will be in a position to examine the issue again. It's not ideal, but I think this is less bad than having gone through with a referendum on a question we're not entitled to put on a referendum. So I really wish we had not put ourselves in this position, but we do. This is the remedy for
I didn't support the referendum either.
So. I didn't either.
Alrighty, so all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Me. Alrighty, No, 271. This is a resolution. Has this gone before environment already? And did it pass there?
Yes, it did.
Alrighty, and that is basically extending the skip the straw law and the plastic cutlery and the condiment packets. And
I'll move it for discussion.
Go ahead.
Second.
So just to let you know, the one change we made in environment was to have the start date conform with the skip the straw start date. So that it'll just be one piece of legislation versus
varying start times.
Yes.
I believe that we just passed the skip the straw, and now before it's even been necessarily properly executed with the Secretary of State's office for skipping the straw, we're now going to be skipping a whole crap load of other things. I think that we should maybe allow the skip, you know, the skip the straw law to go through before we start adding the kitchen sink.
Just a thought. See the kitchen sink on here.
Me neither, but I do understand your argument.
That's next. That's a month after we pass the skip the convent packets. You know, then we're going to, you know, skip the kitchen sink. That's the next thing.
Well, I think the kitchen sink is still needed.
I don't know. So you might have to ask for it.
The idea here is instead of going kind of chip away this and this and this, to have these come in at the same time. And I haven't heard anybody bring forward anything, at least in my hearing, in concept even, beyond plastic stirrers, cutlery, and condiment packets. So the idea would be, instead of doing one and then doing another, to have them come in at the same
Styrofoam.
Time.
Styrofoam.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I actually was almost more in that boat for a minute there, but actually I've been convinced that this is a better way of going about it more. And I think I might have even been misplaced the first time around with plastic straws and not took it all at once then. But the more I've actually been watching the executive's office and how crucial this education component is on plastic bags, and I think the more resources and more energy to put on a broader scale, the better influence we're going to have in making this effective. So that's why I support bringing them together, amending it to change the effective date so they're together while still giving the public time for input. Yeah, I think it's just the right thing to do.
Thanks. This would disallow the current passive distribution of condiment packets, would it not? Can't support it.
Are you including ketchup?
Yes. Which is fun, because they're not even made out of plastic.
Foil.
That's correct.
Yeah, but most of the time in those, a lot of those, some of the places don't give you that now. You have to ask for the ketchup.
At Stewart's, I can walk in and I can grab mustard packets and ketchup packets if I want to, but I'm not required to, nor do they give them to me. So now they're going to have to be behind the counter, and when there's a line 6 deep of people looking to get coffee and soda and scratch offs and cigarettes and pay for their gas, I now have to ask them to go to the back to get ketchup packets for me. I just think it's asinine. That's where I'm going to be doing my shopping.
All right, hold on. Does anybody have any comments on that? On legislator Roms?
Probably not.
I didn't get to hear a lot of activity. You said when you go to Stewart's.
The condiment packets are out.
Like, he gets himself a hot dog. He goes in there, he grabs the hot dog out of there.
You have to pay for the hot dog, don't you?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is normally you make the hot dog, you grab the mustard or whatever, you put it on there, and you go up to the counter and pay for it. So now what you have to do is you make the hot dog, then you got to go over and wait in line and say, can I get a packet of mustard for it?
Yeah, can I get 2 packets of mustard and 3 packets of ketchup? And then they have to go and retrieve that while there's a line of people waiting to pay for their gas and do their convenience store thing.
But you're in that line paying for your hot dog, aren't you?
Can we take condiments off of this? You can have the
condiments are going.
It's another step that for every person who buys a hot food item at that convenience store, it is another step, which is in theory going to make the line longer, which is going to make the job of these people hard. I just think that the original I get to decide if I want a condiment packet thing, you know, the original idea of deciding for myself if I want a condiment packet is picking one up out of the bin.
Right.
I don't understand the idea of eliminating passive distribution of these things. I think it's going to gum up the works in places like this for no reason. I don't have
really
as much of an issue with the plastic. With the plastic cutlery, I have a real issue with the condiment packets.
Isn't it Laura and Joe?
Yeah, it's Laura.
We're not really gonna. All right,
well, okay. I'm definitely.
You're all fired up about it.
What? No, let's just do it now.
No, look at Ace. I'm not entertaining it.
ridiculous.
At Energy and Environment, I had asked for the condiments to be removed because there is no effective alternative for them. And I think passive distribution maybe is a compromise point, because we did want to stop the practice of having 10 ketchups put in when a person doesn't eat ketchup, added to the bag. So
and that was my
passive distribution on this, which we wanted to discourage when there's, you know, because you can have passive distribution of a wooden stirrer and you're in compliance. But I think that the fact that condiment packets don't have an effective alternative.
Well, you could have
passive
you could have a dispenser and you would be in compliance.
True.
You could have a ketchup or a mustard. I'm going like this, but you know what I'm saying? You could have a ketchup.
Yes.
Yeah, I understand.
And that's
sure.
But
that's
passive.
Good point. That would be compliance on passive. You could put out
and they come in plastic cups.
You don't have to put any plastic.
No, but there are plastic cups.
No, but this is the paper ones too, though.
No, I'm saying.
But this doesn't disallow the plastic ones.
That is allowed.
Don't add it. Don't add it.
One at a time here, please.
Just shows how little thought goes into these things.
No.
She's
saying the container.
Just like at Roy Rogers or one of those places.
Right.
Right, but if you're traveling,
that's what you
get. Yeah, and I'll give you an example. I think that that. Maybe another example of what Kathy was talking about is the idea, like, for instance, the one Chinese restaurant on Lucas Avenue. If you go there, what she does is she has them out on the counter. She doesn't throw them in there.
That's what they do at my Chinese restaurant, too.
Which I like, because some of them just throw everything in there, and I get home, and I got all these packets of it, because I don't use soy sauce. Mm-hmm. And, we end up having that bunch of them in there. But she has you go over and grab whatever you want. If you want five... You want 15 of them, you can get them, but I mean, basically people take what they want. But with this, she would not be able to put that on the counter for them to take them as need be.
That's the question.
So I think that is the crux of what many people are arguing here.
Make a motion that we postpone with the hope of removing condiment packets from this law.
Or providing for
some sort of passive distribution. I don't think this has the emergency nature of the C and D dump. I think that we can actually talk about it.
So it makes it very difficult sometimes. But anyway, did you hear what I came up? There was a possible postponement.
I heard.
All right. So what is your response to the condiments?
Well, not to the condiments, but to the postponement. I worry that if we postpone, that we're not going to be able to have it in compliance and coordinate the start dates, which that to me is more frustrating than having all these different start dates where first draws and then a month later we go with the next one.
Tracy, if I could counter, I'll second that postponement, but we had different start dates for plastic bags. We got a state law that counteracts our plastic bags. I don't think a different start
3 months
dates.
After.
I don't think different start dates is going to matter. I think what matters is trying to get this right for the people that use these condiments every day.
You're very passionate about
your well, I mean, a lot of people do use them every day. I mean, if you're working,
I got to ask for at a lot of Dunkin' Donuts already. I'm just throwing that out
there. Breakfast sandwich.
Yeah.
Well, it's a tough comment to follow because of how impassioned my colleague was. I lean more towards allowing this to go to public hearing, and if there is a great condiment outrage amongst the people of Ulster County that are that concerned that they are not going to get an adequate enough ketchup versus supply and demand or whatever you want to call it, when they visit one of these fast food chains, then I think we would have the ability to remove condiment packets without having to go back to a public hearing.
No, that's true.
Well, we might have to go back to a public hearing.
Right. You may have to go back.
I don't think we'd be significantly changing.
We haven't even talked about sugar packets yet.
They're not out of plastic.
Plastic. So.
True. And also your aluminum ketchup ones.
But we don't know what kind of lead paint's in the packets. I mean,
go ahead.
I just want to mention, after what the majority leader just, said that he's got no problem going to a public hearing on this, when a couple of resolutions ago he had a problem with going to a first reading on a rules change because of maybe
under-explained concerns about wording. There was actually a specific concern here, and he's got no problem with it. I just want to point that out.
I think that was about First Amendment rights, but that's besides the point.
That's vague, yes.
Yeah, but I may want to just through the chair remind the minority leader, you know, but there was actually discussion about condiments and about other and cutlery, even at the time in which we spoke about plastic straws. Like, those were actually issues that were, in fact,
I remember.
Out there and, in fact, discussed. So it's not, I mean, I will not to go and be very defensive of the majority leader, but I will go and say that there was at least these issues sort of floating around out there, you know, for a while in advance of this particular legislation.
Right, and some people felt it should have been done at the same time. Other people felt that. And some people felt that, you know, it was better to start out with slow. Start out with something that is easy to do with, to deal with, such as straws.
I just think if we're going to do this and send it to public hearing, we should get it right first, especially since there's no earth-shattering rush.
I'm concerned about conforming the dates. I really am. That's the one thing. I mean, I'm not the sponsor of the legislation.
When does the straw thing go into effect?
3 months.
We're like 2 months away from now. Maybe a little less.
I think it was 3 months.
That's going to be cutting it close anyway.
I think we're close to. Vicky had the date, but they were working to conform.
Yeah, but we already had a. I don't know if it was you, legislator Nolan, who said that the Department of Environment is already beginning the planning process in terms of educational materials.
Well, that'll be complicated then if we're going to add stuff to it.
Yeah.
No, that's why I was saying now's the time to do it. They would be aware of this resolution.
So they're going to start putting educational materials together on an unpassed public hearing?
Can I give you a lot of leeway when you take advantage of it? Go ahead.
Could amend the effective date of the straw ban.
Huh?
We could change the effective date of the straw ban in order to allow more time to work this out. And though I find that not attractive, I am concerned about these condiment packets. When we ask people to do things and we're following a natural inclination anyway, then I think, you know, we're doing the will of the people. I think that the ketchup lovers out there are going to show up at this public hearing, and we may go fast to the public hearing, but then have a much longer time to try to fix it. And I do think the passive distribution of condiments until there's an effective alternative might be a way to deal with this.
Well, there are a number of alternatives. I mean, as Tracy pointed out, the pump that a lot of people have. In other words, you want ketchup, you want...
But it doesn't really allow for a travel container unless you put a lid on it, which is usually made of plastic.
Well, most of the time, if you're getting something, you're putting it directly on the item, aren't you?
Not necessarily.
You're like French fries or something like that. I think that our habits are bad around fast food, but that the will of the public on this, I think we're way out ahead of them on this.
I don't think we should be legislating ketchup use.
Ketchup what?
Use.
My ketchup.
This is misuse, Kevin.
Ketchup abuse.
Think of all the tomatoes that have died to give you that ketchup.
All right, so there is a motion to postpone, and it's been seconded. Any more on the issue?
I just got a text from one of the sponsors. I'm trying to...
Mid-September.
You can postpone it without their consent 3 times. I'm not suggesting that, but...
All right, what do you got?
Actually,
on the postponement, I'm a no.
Did we call it?
No. Tracy is.
Well, he's calling it.
Okay, I don't know. Are we waiting or are we voting?
Well, we can still vote on whether to postpone it or not, and then you're then still debating.
Well, we have one more resolution. She can finish her conversation, and then we can...
Can we go to the next resolution real quickly?
There's a motion on the floor, Mr. Chairman.
And I'll quickly call.
Do you want to table this for the minute and then
like
go back
to
it?
I'll table it. I'll make a motion to table it.
Five minutes tabling on that particular resolution. 5 minutes.
You don't have any questions on this lease? No?
Good? No, I think she's good.
No, okay. I feel like...
No, yeah.
I feel like...
Okay. Yeah.
Or market is stable.
Well, I'm sorry, Mark. If I knew that was you,
Mark, if we knew it was you, if we knew it was you, we would have just postponed this for another month. And,
yeah, I know.
Make you come back.
I got it.
So I'll
now,
move it.
So now we're postponing.
I'll second.
I'm really sorry.
Kenny, you moved it, right?
I did.
In the future, right, please don't worry about coming over and saying, "Hey, Dave, can you
although,
get that? I got some details to go."
Mr. Chair.
I have no problem with that. Yes.
All right. The resolution has been moved and seconded. But through the chair, to the Deputy County Executive. I mean, you know, when we discussed this even last week in caucus, we realized that we are again rocking a hard place here. But what actually is going to be our long term solution with regards to BOE? I mean, is there obviously you're aware of it now, right?
Yeah. I think that there is lots of discussions that need to happen in the very near future.
This is a one-year lease, correct?
It is.
One
could be moving potentially, you know, non-customer-facing operations out of the county office building and putting Board of Elections over the county office building. There's different. Right now we have an architect working on the BRC, the space that wasn't used by Family Court, which is about 20,000 square feet. Rick Alfondre is doing a space analysis study, so comparing use of that building for surrogate court, information technology, other operations, so.
Okay. He took the words right out of my mouth, surrogate court, so I'll just let it go.
Can we actually move surrogate court without actually having a
referendum?
No, it would have to be a referendum.
Yeah, so we're back to the referendum.
To better serve the children and families of Ulster County.
Oh, my God, no, please. Yeah, have that stricken from the record, please.
Yeah, to make sure everybody lives without in happiness.
That was just for fun. That was my own enjoyment. Sorry.
So everybody can live in happiness in Ulster County. Alrighty, so on the issue, it's been put up and seconded, and we've had some discussion on the issue.
Aye.
Alrighty. Tracy's not here. She
then we have old business, right? Well, we have under old business. Don't we have a...
Resolution deadline.
Resolution deadline. I'll move it.
We have a resolution deadline. Where is that?
120.
Their old business.
Yeah. I don't know that there's been a final determination by...
Right now we have to move it first before we even discuss.
I'll second it for discussion then. Hector moved for discussion, I second it.
No problem. You know, I think what we really need to do is look at the idea of having our meetings on Thursdays and bumping back that a couple other days the other way, and I think that would solve the problem. And I met on the Thursdays before. I think it actually frees up things a little better, and to me, I think that's what we should be doing. In other words, we own part of the problem, and we should be part of the solution.
I do know that I've had conversations with the county executive. I think there's an opportunity to move the calendar a little bit. I think Wednesday, which oftentimes would be putting the resolution deadline the day after the previous month's session, is a little difficult for us to grasp, but maybe 2 days later on that Friday would be, you know, a compromise that we would look at, and it would add 4 days, which it would also mean that you weren't getting your resolutions on a Friday night. You'd potentially be able to get them on a Tuesday night.
Moving our meeting to Thursday create a problem.
Which one? Your
our monthly meeting would be on the third Thursday instead
as opposed
of Tuesday.
Gets 2 extra days.
It gives you... Yeah, I mean,
that also gives us better time for committee structures because you can actually run, in other words, before caucuses. You can have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before caucuses. Before, you have just Monday and Tuesday before a caucus. The Monday before a caucus, and then Tuesday you got caucus. Here you got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before a caucus, and then you got caucus. So I think it just makes more sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to comment on... I don't think we have a problem with that. Whatever you want to do, now that could... happen until next year.
Well,
right?
You just didn't know that affected you.
I don't think that would affect
us.
Well, I mean, I know that Legislator Archer, who I guess is the sponsor of this, I know that she had been working, I thought, at one point, I guess directly with the county executive on this, or with you, but I believe that she wanted to move it ahead, I know, as of our last caucus.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I'll call you back. Yeah, but we...
Wait.
I don't know if
she...
She
wanted to move it in?
Yeah.
She did. She wanted to move it, but she wasn't...
Yeah, further updates, she said.
Yeah, she had no further updates. She didn't want to move ahead.
No, she said to move ahead.
She did, no. She said she would like to. I don't think she said that she wanted it done.
On the resolution deadline.
She was
No, she wasn't ready to move ahead. I mean, she would like
and,
to, but
she said she
wasn't saying
she wasn't
without finishing
and
the
Tracy,
sentence. I didn't
hear her saying Tracy, so you know, my comment was basically what we should be doing is moving our legislative to Thursday and then kicking back the other one a couple days. Because Thursday gives us Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before caucus each time. It makes it easier for meetings.
I feel very strongly about the 2 weeks, but can I talk to you about ketchup? Because I'm so late leaving.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so I spoke to Laura and to Joe. In the spirit of compromise, they are okay with rather than postponing, amending the legislation to allow for passive distribution of condiments.
And we're gonna write the language on the back of a napkin now.
Your ketchup hangs on.
I mean, I feel like we can have a general
some things are worth fighting for.
Are you saying you're good with this?
Yes, he said that was his ill and he had to stand on it.
I'm gonna set this public hearing.
Right, let's just pass it tonight and amend it tomorrow when we can all be clear-headed and not at 9:10 at night.
We amended it. Let's make an amendment, as you pointed out, to make it pay. In other words, that the passive distribution of condiments is acceptable, correct?
Whatever.
Yeah, the language will say that upon request, but passive distribution of condiments shall be allowed.
All right.
Wherever you want
to. You made the amendment?
Yes.
Seconded.
All right, seconded. All those in favor of the amendment?
Sure.
All right, now, on the resolution as amended, can we send this to public hearing?
Yeah.
All right.
Aye.
Sure.
Sure. He gets a sure. It's a more definitive aye, I think. That's an aye plus, isn't it?
I think sure is closer to a whatever, but...
Here, just sign that and I'll fill in the amendment.
It all depends,
To me, it's asinine, it's but what are you going to do? That's what we do around here, I guess.
All righty.
Wouldn't be this way if it was an amendment to one of my laws. I'll tell you that for damn sure.
Tell you what, I'll give you. You want to make a motion to adjourn or what?
Ketchup.
I move we adjourn.
I was going to say, why are you fighting that?
All right, all those in favor, aye.